Welcome, brothers, sisters, working class heroes. This is the Rick Smith Show. Thanks for being here. Tonight we're going to be talking about the right-wing attacks that are continuing across the country. Education privatization, the fiscal mirage, of course, jobs, 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 and the trade number. And we're going to talk about the no rights at work agenda in full swing, or as it's called, the Workplace Fairness and Equity Act. I guess cute puppies and dogs were out of the question. I guess we love ice cream and free beer. I guess free beer and wings was taken as the most obnoxious name. The Workplace Fairness and Equity Act. Yeah. Meaning that you're going to make less money, you're going to have no health care, and you're not going to have a pension. Yeah, that's right. I look at this, and my head has been spinning all day long. I've gone from angry to frustrated to ticked off to, let's get to the streets. Let's take this where it needs to go. And I look today in history. Back in 1995, the folks in London, Ontario, a town of about 300,000, had 40,000 of their workers go out on a general strike because they were proposing cuts to social services. We need to go back to those days. We need to go back to the days where we got it. My grandparents' generation got it. They stood and they fought for each other. They didn't allow nonsense like this to go on. And when it happened, they went to the streets. They held people accountable. I remember 2010. The Republicans swept into power, and they were talking. It was jobs, jobs, jobs. Remember? Laser-like focus, jobs, jobs, jobs. Had a nice little contract that they were going to help me come with America, and lots of flowery language, open and transparent government, all of that stuff. They were all the platitudes and all the rhetoric and all we believe in open and transparent government. We're going to put everything online. Everything will be there, and it'll be there transparent, so people can be involved in the process, and it'll be right out, open in front. Yet, the rhetoric and the actions. You look here in Pennsylvania, the way they've done things here. A lot of backdoor stuff. Democrats completely locked out of the process. But I'm in awe of what they did in Michigan last Thursday. I'm in awe in what they did in Michigan today. Because that's steamroller. That's authoritarian. That's absolute power. Saying we don't care what the opposition says. We don't care about the process. We don't care about the people. We don't care about open and transparent government. We don't care about any of that. We care about political will. We care about imposing our will and our values and our beliefs on everyone else. And I guess it's only fitting that Governor Rick Scott Snyder signed the law behind closed doors, probably in the same closet where they dreamt this up. And at the end of the day, the more I look at this, the angrier I get. Because all along, you had Snyder saying, it's divisive.
Right to work is an issue that's a very divisive issue. People feel very strongly about it.
It's divisive. We're not going to do it, right?
Right to work is an issue that may have its time and place, but I don't believe it's appropriate in Michigan during 2012.
No, but what did they do on a Thursday? Like thieves in the night. 8 hours. Put it forth, passed it, moved along the way. So he signs it. And the rationale, very Machiavellian. If anyone's ever read The Prince, you realize the ideal that what you do is you take your enemy in the public square and you gut them in public. So he told everyone, he said, look, I told them not to go after Proposition 2. I told them not to try and put collective bargaining into the law. I told them not to do it. So now we're going to make them suffer. We're going to gut them in public. Under the justification that it's going to create jobs. And according to Rick Snyder, the governor of Michigan, Indiana's a shining example. Yet the guy who pushed through the shining example and now works for the Chamber of Commerce couldn't name one company that had gone to Indiana. But according to Snyder, oh, Indiana's, you know, a paradise. Jobs are moving there by the droves. Yet when he was asked under oath, well, this is what he was asked.
Do you think there's evidence out there to show that it creates jobs, that it helps states compete?
The auto industry is a very competitive industry now in terms of their labor agreements and such. So on the face of it, I don't automatically have an answer, but I believe it's something that we should all take the time to understand before simply people kind of revert to their traditional positions on it.
People revert to their traditional, well, ram it right through. Because he just said right there, and that was just earlier in this year, we don't have any numbers. We don't know. Because the facts, and when someone who believes in something says they don't know what the numbers are against them. The reality is against them. The facts are against them. Because Oklahoma passed it, nothing. In fact, they lost jobs. Indiana passed it at one point in the past, lost jobs, and then repealed it. Which I expect at some point in the near future that to happen again. So you go, well, Rick, why'd they do it? Well, one, they could. They could. This was the moment. This was the time when they had the people who were going to, they were leaving, there was no political consequence, they had already been, their terms were up, they're done, gone. So they had nothing left to lose. Again, another reason I'm not a fan of term limits. But they had nothing left to lose. And a lot to gain. So when you see the billionaire class spreading the money around, I'm curious where the folks who are leaving, I'm curious where they're going to go work once they're done here at the end of the year. Interesting story I saw. The guy who funds Americans for Prosperity, the big Tea Party, Koch brothers, they claimed that this no rights at work agenda, this legislation rammed through in Michigan, is the shot heard around the world in the fight to weaken unions. Around the world. Understand that. This isn't just Michigan losing their rights. This is the world. Because people like the Kochs, this billionaire class that we have, they're not just American billionaires. They're global. They're the heads of powerful global empires who then impose their will all over. So now if we can lower conditions, and I've said this for ever since Mitt Romney said that he was going to pursue a no rights at work agenda across the entire country. Because if you remember, and I've said this a number of times and I'll say it more, when Indiana went through and wanted to pass their no rights at work agenda, when they wanted to ram their law through, the argument was, is we'll be able to steal jobs from Illinois. We'll be able to steal jobs from other states. And when New Hampshire wanted to do it, we'll be able to steal jobs from Vermont. And I heard the rumblings of, oh, hey, you do it in Michigan, we can steal jobs from Ohio. So now that Michigan's done it, Ohio's going to have to because they don't want to get their jobs stolen, right? If you believe the rhetoric, which it isn't factual. But if you believe what the right is telling you, the rhetoric, then Ohio's going to have to do it because they can't get all their jobs stolen by Michigan. And then Pennsylvania's going to go, hey, wait, Ohio did it. And I don't want to lose all our, I don't want Ohio stealing our jobs. So then they're going to do it. And eventually the entire country has this no rights at work agenda. Then who do we steal jobs from? Because now all you've done is lower wages, worsen conditions, destroy benefits, and destroy the standard of living of American workers. Then who do you steal from? Oh, yeah, the Chinese and the Vietnamese and the Indians. Why? Because our conditions will be right about that level when that happens. And then they can bring those jobs back so that we can relive the good old days of the 80s and 90s, the 1880s and the 1890s. And the wealth class can then once again rise to their rightful thrones, or the thrones that they believe are rightfully theirs. I don't care where you are on the issue. What happened in Michigan on Thursday, what happened today, is a theft of our democracy. It's a theft of who we are. Now, will they be able to take this to court and have it repealed? Will they be able to who knows? But what we know right now, what we see right at this very moment, The people who told us that they believe in open and transparent government, the people who told us that they were going to be the ones who fix the system, they're going to post everything online, we're going to see it all, which I'm in favor of, by the way. I'm in favor of open and transparent. I'm in favor of everything in the sunshine. Because then, maybe we get to know who's behind all of this model legislation. I think we already know. But then we know who the money is. And for me, the much bigger issue here, who funded this? Who funded all of these campaigns? Where is this money coming from all of these secretive groups? Who are our legislators aligning themselves with? How many state legislators here in Pennsylvania are members of ALEC, the American Legislative Exchange Council? How many in Michigan? Oh, but Rick, you know, that's secret. Oh, can't tell that. Nonsense. If you're a legislator, your first obligation is to the state, to the taxpayers, to the people of your constituents, not to some well-funded, well-researched, really nicely written pieces of legislation there for your taking, some think tank. I'm sorry, maybe I just have it backwards, but I think your primary responsibility is to exactly what it is, the people. And this thing in Michigan, it was the shot heard around the world. And I'm hoping that we, the working people, the American workforce, reacts much like the patriots that founded this country when the real shot heard around the world happened. That we come together, we stand together, we fight together, and we take down people like this. People who would do our middle class, who would do our nation harm. I'm hoping that every person who sees this will take just that one part away from it. Whether you agree with labor or not, whether you agree with unions or not, the way they went about it, what they did was unconscionable. Absolutely, positively unconscionable. And another example of why I'm not a fan of one-party rule. Let's take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk with Scott Conklin, Pennsylvania State Representative. Some news on his today, but also, you know, this stuff's right here in Pennsylvania as well. Quick break, back after this. Or was it a shell game from the master of the cloak and dagger?
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. You're listening to WIN, Workers Independent News, a production of Diversified Media Enterprises. I'm Doug Cunningham. Michigan's congressional delegation met with Governor Rick Snyder on Monday, asking him to veto or at least delay a vote on right-to-work legislation that might soon be on his desk. Jesse Russell reports.
The legislation would allow workers to benefit from contracts negotiated by unions, even if they choose not to pay union dues. According to Congressman Carl Levin, Snyder expressed he would seriously consider the request from the congressional Democrats representing the state. President Barack Obama stepped into the fight during a visit to a Daimler Detroit diesel plant in the state on Monday. He said right-to-work laws have little to do with economics, but instead have everything to do with politics.
What's going
to
make us succeed is we got the best workers, well-trained, reliable, productive, low turnover, healthy. That's what makes us strong. And it also is what allows our workers then to buy the products that we make. Because they got enough money in their pockets.
Ulico CEO Ed Smith says the only labor-owned finance and insurance company in the U.S. is celebrating its 85th year and looking forward to the next 85. Smith says Ulico's investments, especially in commercial real estate over the past 35 years, help finance construction projects that create good union jobs and protect workers while providing solid investment returns on pension funds.
Our union-only language that we require in our loan documents requires a 100% union workforce on building and construction and maintenance of the product. So over those 35 years, we've created over 500 million hours of work for building trades people. jobs with good union wages, full family health care, defined benefit pension, training and apprenticeship. So it's very, very successful, double bottom line, as I like to call it, that we create with our J for Jobs.
Smith says union workers bring an awful lot to the economic table, and in economic investments, the rights of workers must be protected.
They bring a skilled workforce that's second to none. You know, in our J for Jobs, you know, those are create the building trade jobs. We always say it's a job done right the first time, because you got skilled workers who've been through training and apprenticeship programs, best in the world, that are on those projects. So there's real value.
Ulico will also be involved in infrastructure projects through a fund established this year. Smith says as infrastructure investments come in to rebuild crumbling infrastructure in America, it's important that workers not get the short end of the stick on those investments. This newscast made possible in part through underwriting from the National Association of Letter Carriers. You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Remembering that united we bargain, divided we beg. Rick Smith.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Check out the website, TheRickSmithShow.com. Questions, comments, something on your mind, you can email me, Rick@TheRickSmithShow.com. Randy sent me an email during the break, said my U.S. Representative Joe Pitts is 75% funded by contributions from PACs. Chinese billionaires, he asks? I don't know. That's who knows? I mean, that's the reality. Where all of this secret money is, where the Koch brothers, the people who said, you know, this, what happened in Michigan, the shot heard round the world to help fight those unions. We don't know where the money's coming from. How many of our legislators in this state are members of the American Legislative Exchange Council? How many pieces of legislation passed through our halls were written by those folks? We don't know. Because there isn't enough open transparency, there isn't enough sunshine, which is why I've asked my next guest, Representative Scott Conklin, to come talk to us about what's going on over there and what happened in Michigan as well. Scott, thanks for taking time for us.
Hey, good evening, Rick. How are you doing tonight?
I am not good, to be honest. I'm angry, I'm frustrated, I'm a lot ticked off. And a lot of it has to do with, you know, you look at this group, the American Legislative Exchange Council, you look at all of these handful of billionaires and all of this money perverting our system and ramming through something like this no rights at work agenda like's gone out in Michigan. How else should I be? Angry.
And I'll tell you what, you have absolutely every right to be.
So let me ask you. You know, you have intimate relationships with these folks over here in Harrisburg. You know the folks here. How many, rough estimate, how many are members of the American Legislative Exchange Council? Or don't we know?
If it's out there, it's information that I don't know.
And isn't that a problem?
Absolutely, and I'm changing phones on you here. How's that?
A little better.
Good. It's a real problem because one of the things that we went years ago, when a few of us went to Harrisburg in 2006, was transparency. And we've gone from transparency to window dressing. And we have legislators that are actually putting legislation out that looks good, but it's actually less transparent today. And when you look at things that have been done, look at some of the over the past couple of years, you'll see bills that are being pushed, and for some reason the legislator pushing them is ending up with tens of hundreds of thousands of dollars of campaign donations during the time they're pushing them.
Yep.
And you have no idea where they're coming from. They're coming from PACs. And one of the things we talk about PACs, and what I'm sure the average person doesn't realize, the reason why they're pushing the right to work PACs, or the right to work, is to try to eliminate the amount of money that is given to labor-friendly individuals such as myself.
Right.
That as long as you can have the Koch brothers or a large donor or Wagner or whoever these folks may be, being able to fund millions of dollars and to push their own agenda into one individual, it makes it easier if you don't have anybody standing in their way.
Yeah, and what bothers me is that we don't even get to know who's giving them the money. That's what's frustrating me. When labor gives money to someone, you know, because they have to report it. But you look at some of these other groups, not so much.
Absolutely. When labor gives money, and I always enjoy going on a good radio show or a TV show where the person's downing unions, and especially over the last storm, I said, well, you know what? If you don't like those union linemen go out, please tell them to stop what they're doing. Or if you don't want your house, the fire put out, make sure you tell that fireman when he gets there, don't come on your property. Or the police officer, the state trooper that's protecting your life, make sure you tell them that you don't want them there. Make sure they understand that because they're a union employee, they're absolutely no good. But, and you and I have had this discussion before, I would much rather work for those 5,000 or 6,000 women that are working at the nursing home, taking care of our seniors who put in $15-$20 a year. I would much rather have those people supporting me than one billionaire putting $100,000 into my account.
Now, I'm with you, but shouldn't we be doing that as a matter of law? I mean, you know, not just on the national level, but also on the state level, because I look at Michigan, and what the information that I'm getting coming out of Michigan is this was really pushed by the Koch brothers and the DeVos people. The Amway people, they said, look, you know, you don't pass this through, we're going to make your life miserable. We're going to run people against you in the primary, or we're going to reward you with cushy jobs once you're term limited out. So this was a setup. This was, well, I mean, Michigan, best democracy money can buy.
Absolutely. Even look in Pennsylvania, Rick. Look at some of the colleagues on the Republican side that were taken out, Rick Geist and some other Republicans that they've gone after. These folks I would not call liberal under any stretch of anyone's imagination, but they were moderate Republicans who would not bring down a union group just for the sake of bringing it down.
Yep.
They would stand up and protect workers. What do? They're taking them out in the primary in Pennsylvania as well. So you're right. They're using that. They're using the fear of leverage, and they're using the fear of money put against them.
So all this ugliness that we've seen in places like Wisconsin and Ohio and Michigan, as I've been saying, it's eventually going to come here. We're all in this shark tank. It's just that, you know, Michigan and Wisconsin and Ohio, those were the flavors of those months. Our month's coming.
Oh, you know, in the state of Pennsylvania, which most people don't realize, the right to work was close to going through the last time. I know the governor at this point, you know, he said that he's not after it. He's more interested in all the privatization. I guarantee you, he gets the privatization through, he will go after the workers next.
Absolutely.
In the House, we're still at 91. We made not one pickup across the board. We flipped one seat on each side. We are sitting in a situation that is not friendly. We were outspent huge amounts of money in the last election cycle because, to be quite frank, even our own members who should be union friendly have found the riches of taking money from organizations that are more corporation friendly. And we're losing those folks on the votes now as well.
No, I mean, at the end of the day, as I've been saying, it comes down to the dollars and cents. And while we may have out-procreated the billionaire class, they've got much more money. The concentration of wealth at the very top has never been greater in this country than it is right now.
And the expendable wealth. One of the scariest parts for an individual such as myself is that I look at the numbers. I always laugh. My wife and I are entrepreneurs. We're in the retail business. And I always hear these guys talking about the small business people are going to be hurt, whether it's the national level, you know, if they keep taxing. I'm like thinking, I want to know who these small business people are that are making over $250,000. Those folks aren't small business.
No.
But at the end of the day, what's happening is, and here comes the scary factor, is that I'm a businessman. I know numbers. I know Democrats are not supposed to be business people, but as I tell folks, I'm nonpartisan. You know that. I don't care how you're registered. But the problem is once you get to the upper 1%, those folks are very partisan. And I cannot tell you what any of this legislation, right to work, anything has ever done or will ever to help me in small business. But here's what's scary. When you look at the trends of when you look at district by district, you're seeing that on the Republican side, they're voting at the same level every election cycle. When you're looking at the Democratic side, they're dropping off significantly down to where the turnout just isn't coming in. And that's the problem. They've learned that if you turn off the voter, they do not vote. And the moderate voter isn't voting, and those are the folks that are voting for the right reasons, for the right people.
Yeah, and that's what I said about the campaign in Wisconsin, with all of the people being inundated with advertisement, inundated with phone calls and email and all this stuff. You know, the more that you bombard people, the more that they want, they're going to eventually repel from it. And all of this attack ads, all of this money spent in this last election, for people like me, it was great. But for my wife, she was by August, she was like, I want the pain to stop.
And that's the idea behind it. People believe that a negative ad changes somebody's idea. That's not the idea behind a lot of negative ads. A lot of negative ads are vote suppression. They're strictly doing a vote to keep you from voting. Look at McCain. Here was a guy 10 years ago was the poster child for finance reform.
Yep.
Then he got in trouble and he needed money. You don't hear John McCain talking about finance. Now he's talking about how corporations are people. If there was anything that has hurt us, it has been that one bill that allows corporations to put unlimited money. One of the things that I'd very much like to see is that a cap put on this, and I know even our friends have been very leery about caps putting on, but we can't afford to fight the battles against these folks with unlimited funding anymore.
I'm a fan of publicly funded elections. I mean, it should be about ideas, not who can raise the most money.
That's exactly right. If all these folks want to put billions of dollars into election, say it's truly for the people, what they should do is put billions of dollars into a public fund to allow each candidate to put his message out at the equal volume.
And we should also be having radio stations and TV stations giving time, because after all, those are the public's airwaves. They should be doing that so that each candidate can talk to the masses without having to raise billions of dollars. I mean, it was $1 billion they spent on TV ads just for the presidential race.
Well, look at, even when you're looking at candidates having, you're talking about airtime, even having time in front of the voters. Debates were always something that was done. It was done by the chamber. It was done by different organizations. You don't even see in close elections, you don't even see those organizations doing the forums anymore, simply because they do not want the other side to have an open microphone with press there.
Yeah.
So, I mean, the times are changing. Today we did some with more transparency for Penn State and other state related. But one of the things that's important, I think we have to do at this state, is that in Pennsylvania is light years behind any type of reform when it comes to finance reform and it comes to election reform. I believe we have to get serious about election reform and we have to get serious about finance reform. And the only way that we're going to be able to do that is to come up with a significant plan that somehow curtails the amount of money. And the easiest thing I can equate this to, look at baseball today. Baseball has the rich and the poor teams. The rich teams are playing in the World Series or in the playoffs every year. The poor teams, Pittsburgh Pirates and other teams, can't break 500. Why? Because they don't have the budget to spend.
Yep.
Politics is no different. You have organizations that are funding candidates to millions of dollars, and then you have some very good candidates who can't raise the money to be competitive. And you're not having the best people put out on the field because of that.
Yeah, and you know, today is a perfect example of how that happens, how the money bought this no rights at work agenda and is going to ram it down the throats of the people in Michigan. And as an entrepreneur, Scott, as someone who it's a retail business, you thrive or die on how much money people have in their pockets. And you look at the statistics, states that have pursued this no rights at work agenda make less money, less health care, less pension, higher fatality rates on the job, higher injury rates, all of the negative things that you don't want your state to have, and, oh, by the way, would kill someone like you, like an entrepreneur.
Absolutely. I was in a forum a few years ago with one of my colleagues who were talking about, if we're going to compete, we have to stop the unions. We can't let them compete. And I asked him, I said, How is the U.S. worker ever going to make it on a dollar a day? Because if you're talking about competing, we're talking about a dollar a day. But even beyond that, you're right. I'm in the retail business. We would go out of business tomorrow if the people no longer had expendable cash to spend. because we don't sell food items. We sell items that are the extra special items. We would be out tomorrow if they don't make any more money. Henry Ford once said he liked when Democrats were in office, were in the White House, because people spent more money. And what he meant by that is that the Democratic Party puts more money in the Kennedy bottom-up economics, that when you give the poor more, they spend it. When you give the rich more, they save it, and they go overseas. And if you really want to revive the economy, you have to make sure that you have a healthy work base with expendable cash.
Common sense. You know, that's exactly what I've been talking about for years now. The more money that folks have in their pocket through their work, however, the more they can spend in shops like yours. And I had the conversation with, you know, with somebody a couple of years ago when one of the factories in Carlisle, the town that I live in, went out of business, was asking their workers for an $8 an hour pay cut. And he was all for it. Yeah, take that money. They make too much. And I said, you know what? That's your money that they're taking away. That's the $8 an hour that they used to spend in your restaurant and in the guy next door's. And you know what? As soon as those guys lost their job, so did those businesses, because there was no one to support them.
And on top of that, when you ask, you can ask any legislator who is anti-labor, ask them what a union carpenter makes or a union plumber makes or a union laborer makes. They can't tell you. All they can tell you is that they make too much. They have no idea what they make. Oh, by the way, we, the legislator, got our raise again this year. You know, we those who are anti-labor, anti-increasing, they did get their raise this year, their cost of living increase. And I didn't hear one of them wanting to give it back.
Yeah. We've got an awful lot of work to do, and I see what happened in Michigan, and it could, and as I've said, it could easily happen here.
When you see Wisconsin and Michigan going down, Pennsylvania, Ohio, we aren't far behind.
Sad stuff. Last line of questioning I've got for you. I saw today you were out proposing some legislation to hold the board of trustees at Penn State and I guess Temple and Pitt as well.
In Lincoln.
A little more transparency, a little more openness, and kind of updating things a little bit. I guess the last time that there was anything done on how the board operates was 1855.
Wait, yeah, the Penn State, it was the Farmers College in 1855. There's been little done since then, and what the piece of legislation does, this does not affect Penn State the way they teach, the way they do anything. All what this does is take it to a more manageable board. It's still more at 22. Ohio State has 19. It does not allow the governor to be a voting member, which he shouldn't be. It's strictly, there's a conflict of interest. It doesn't allow the president to be on the board because, again, you're looking at a conflict. You're looking at a conflict of interest. But the most important thing, what this does for all of them, it brings it under the right to know, and that the citizens have a right to know, and that's. It's pretty basic. All four pieces of legislation, you can put them all together, and it's still less than a half inch thick. It's straightforward worded, but, yeah, it's about transparency. Just like we're talking about government, just like we're talking about any other agency, if you can't hide it, you don't do it. When people know how you vote the right way.
I'm all in favor of it. And the question I have is what's taken so long? I mean – if you had something like what you're proposing in place, would the scandal with Jerry Sandusky have, would any of that stuff been, could it have been stopped? Could it have been cut off at the earlier stage?
You don't know if it would have changed what Sandusky did, but it would have, I believe it would have changed how it was handled by the Board of Trustees. I mean, even the way it is today, for instance, the governor sat on that board, and you hear other trustees saying he's the one that pushed for Joe Paterno's firing. In fact, he was there the night he was firing, and he was a voting member, so it was unanimous. What to tell you, the governor voted to fire Joe Paterno. Now, what's wrong with that is that to this day there's still never been a trial or any type of indictments done. And I believe if those board members were held accountable, they would have probably handled it like other corporations do, that when you suspect somebody of wrongdoing, you suspend them until an investigation is done. But because of the way it was done, no one has access or knowing. And that's not the reason we did it, but that's just a simple example of how a non-open agency conducts itself.
Now, I got to be honest. Anything that opens, anything where there's more openness and more transparency and more of an opportunity for we the people to look in and make sure that people are on the up and up and doing the right thing, I'm in favor of.
Absolutely. You know, you put it down to basics. If you're standing in front of a police officer, you don't shoplift because you'll be seen. And you know, and the public themselves are the best watchdogs there are. And when you have to go before the public and explain your actions, you make sure you do it to the best of your ability in a way that you can explain it. And that's all we're asking for.
What are the chances of it passing?
One of the fears is that it'll be taken. Somebody will take it who's close to the governor, water it down, run a bill, say, see, we did something, when in reality, we did nothing. And that's the reason why the bill I did, or there's actually four of them, we did exactly to the Auditor General's the recommendations. So there's no politics in it. It's strictly a public policy legislation without worrying about whose toes we stepped on, what public official is going to be upset about this. And that's the reason we did it that way. So when the fight comes, when they try to change it, we'll have a standing and we'll be able to stand up and say, no, this is not what an independent people want. This is how it should be.
I'm right there with you. Open it up to right to no requests, more sunshine, more openness, more transparency. I'm on board. And as it goes along, I'd love to have you back and talk more about it. Scott, it's always great talking with you.
Hey, Rick, thank you. We're always there for you.
I appreciate it. Our good friend, Pennsylvania State Representative Scott Conklin. Quick break. Back with your thoughts. 1-888-520-RICK. 1-888-520-7425. This is the Rick Smith Show.
Fighting till the end, and we're not gonna break tonight, and we're not gonna bend. Some say the union's down, but I asked around, and everybody said, this is a union town, a union town, all down the line. This is a union town, all down the line. And if they come to strip our rights away, we'll give them hell every time. This is a union town, a union town.
United we bargain, divided we bear.
Ganley Law is a proud sponsor of the Rick Smith Show. To better serve you, Ganley Law has 9 offices throughout Pennsylvania. Call our main office in Waynesboro. If we think we can help you, we'll schedule a time and place that is convenient for you for a confidential initial consultation at no charge. At Ganley Law, you pay no retainer and no attorney fees unless we are successful in bringing your claim. Our experienced attorneys, Charles Ganley and Deborah Packer, will fight for your rights. If you face a work-related injury, an occupational disease such as hearing loss, work-related hepatitis, or HIV, sexual harassment, or employment discrimination, call Ganley Law. That's toll-free statewide at 1-888-FIGHT-17. That's 1-888-334-4817. Ganley Law, fighting for workers' rights, fighting for your rights.
Also at GanleyLaw.com. In the scramble to fix the federal deficit, one of Washington's worst ideas is widely considered by political elites, including some Democrats, to be a good idea, even a painless fix. The idea is to raise the age of eligibility for both Social Security and Medicare, shoving it from 65 to 67 or beyond. After all, goes Washington's conventional wisdom, people live so much longer now, so it won't hurt to postpone eligibility and save a couple of years of taxpayer outlays to people. But, as economist and columnist Paul Krugman has pointed out, this bit of conventional wisdom is merely conventional, in the sense of trite. While life expectancy has gone up on average, it has not increased much for working stiffs, especially tens of millions of lower wage and poorer workers. Unlike being a member of Congress, the work that these people do tends to require heavy lifting, which can make you old fast. Requiring them to do it even deeper into old age and to wait longer for medical assistance is, as Krugman bluntly calls it, cruel. Bear in mind, too, that working-class families are precisely the people who count on Social Security and Medicare. They don't have the socialized medical benefits and golden pensions that those pampered conventional wisdom spouters in Congress get. Oh, one more thing. The purported savings from this fix are so minimal as to be illusory. In fact, shoving ill or crippled elderly workers out of the cost-effective Medicare system will jack up America's health care costs. This is Jim Hightower saying, so raising the retirement age is gratuitous as well as cruel, but mostly it's severely ignorant. What's at work here is a policy-making elite that includes no working-class people, so it can cluelessly believe that making the lives of these Americans worse is painless. What do the corporate powers from Wall Street to Walmart have in common? They hate the Hightower Lowdown. You can see why at www.hightowerlowdown.org.
And by the way, what we shouldn't do, I just got to say this, what we shouldn't be doing is trying to take away your rights to bargain for better wages or working conditions.
Be honest with you. You think about the Employee Free Choice Act as they're singing about there in the song, and it just makes me go back to the beginning of the Obama administration where there was hope, there was a potential. Hey, we might actually pass some pro worker legislation. And what's gone on the last 4 years? What's gone on? Well, the attacks on workers, the attacks on families, the attacks on, well, the attacks on most of the working people in this country by the Republicans. And what's amazing to me, and Scott's right, you know, the folks who are the middle folks, they voted for the decent people, they wanted to be part of, and they just got tired, they got fed up, they got enough, make the pain stop. You know, I think, it just reminded me of a conversation my wife and I had back in August, when the ads were really starting, August, September, they were really starting to ramp up with the ugliness. You know, and then into the conventions when the ugliness really, the attack ads were just in full blow. She's just like, stop. I want to be able to listen to the radio or watch TV or do whatever it is I'm doing without all this vitriol and this hatred and this negativity. And people tuned out. And for the anti-government people, that's a victory. For the Republicans in this state, that's a major victory. You know, someone emailed me before and said, wasn't Michigan a Democratic state? You know, for the most part, parts of it were. But what's going on is the right has poured tons of money into there. And they've taken advantage of the crisis that they created. And I just, you know, at some point you hope. And my fear, and honestly, truthfully, my fear is that things are going to have to get bad enough. Because as I was listening to Governor Snyder there, and you can talk about the history of labor, and look, you know, the right wing is now telling the history of the labor movement from a very pro-corporate, we want labor unions to be just like corporations. We want to run just like Wall Street. And that's not what labor unions were about. They were about social progress. They were about taking care of the least of us, and they still are. They're about the idea of an injury to one is an injury to all. So if we allow one working person in this country to get the shaft, if we allow one worker to get screwed out of wages or screwed out of benefits, it's going to hurt us all. Understand what the right knows. The right understands divide and conquer. The wealth class understands divide and conquer. They understand Jay Gould, I could easily pay half the working class to kill the other half. Because when your stomachs are empty, that person who's dangling that carrot in front of you going, oh, all you gotta do is either crack that guy's head open or vote against this guy. We're getting to that point. This has been at least two generations of investment by the wealth class. And you listen to the messaging, man, the messaging is just makes it so logical. Oh, how could you be against it? Who possibly has, who could be against the right of people to work? Oh, freedom to work, the freedom and equity to work. Who could be against those things? Oh, liberty of work. Except when you get down to the reality, you get down to what exactly it is they're talking about. They're talking about dividing and conquering. You know, I know a guy who runs a right-wing think tank who told me one time, he said, you know, I'm not anti-union. I'm the most pro-union person you'll ever meet. I think we should have more unions, 10 unions in every workplace. Every worker should have their own union. They should be able to pick and choose whichever union they want to belong to. Because they know the more that more you can get people bickering and fighting and going after each other, the more they can keep us at each other's throats, the less we're going to go after them. So if the Kochs can keep the Tea Party going after the labor, the labor people, if you can keep people at each other's throats, the liberals and the progressives fighting each other, and the conservatives and the libertarians, and the libertarians and the liberals and the conservatives, and you keep all these people fighting each other, you know who they're not going after? You're damn right. They're not going after the 2%. And look what's going on in D.C. with the fiscal mirage. Oh, we've got to protect the job creators. And what the politicians know and understand, they're holding this country hostage for 2% of the nation. 2%! Because they know 98% of us aren't going to vote against them. Because they know the 2% of the money that they get can overpower and divide us. That's what they know. And the sad reality is we've allowed it to happen time and time again. That's the sad reality. So when you look at what happened in Michigan, that is, well, that's the product of us allowing a billionaire class to be created. You know, after the Great Depression, we said we don't need that robber baron class. And we had the Great Compression, as Paul Krugman calls it, where we all led fairly similar lives, where the rich people lived in the same town. Their kids went to the same schools. You ate at the same restaurants. So you know what? The rich guy in the neighborhood had an incentive to make sure that those schools didn't suck, had an incentive to make sure the roads weren't filled with potholes, had an incentive to say, oh, we'd like to have a better library. But now we live two separate lives. They have their gated communities with their private police forces and their private fire departments and their private airports and their private country clubs, all of nice, perfectly gated away from us. It's a damn shame. Let's take a quick break. Right back after this. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
10% of the world. 10% of the people. Own 90% of the world. Where do you fit in? Take a look at yourself. 10% of the people. Own 90% of the world.
Where smart policy and sound investment matters. The Rick Smith Show.
Are you feeling that back-to-school squeeze? Backpacks, clothes, shoes, all the things they have to have because last year's stuff is so last year? If you have a supply shortage, we can help. We know what it's like, and we've got the ultimate hall pass for you. Transfer your high-interest and department store balances to PSECU. Our Visa balance transfer has a low 2.9 annual percentage rate, good through New Year's Eve of 2013. We don't charge you a transfer fee, and you can roll up to $20,000 in balances if you qualify. That's a lot of swag. Financing life is what we do best. Talk with us. Call 800-LOAN-555 or visit pseCU.com/visa for complete program details.
This credit union is federally insured by the National Credit Union Administration, Equal Opportunity Lender.
Earth, sky.
Homicide moves through a community like an infectious disease. That's according to a study published in the journal Justice Quarterly in late 2012.
The researchers say their findings could help police track and even prevent murders. Using Newark, New Jersey as a pilot case, researchers from Michigan State University's School of Criminal Justice applied public health tracking methods to the city's more than 2,000 homicides between the years 1982 and 2008.
They found the killings weren't randomly located. Instead, they followed a pattern evolving from the city's center and moving southward and westward over time. influenza spreads to susceptible groups in a certain pattern. For example, children and the elderly are affected soonest.
Much like a flu, homicide clusters in Newark, often fueled by gangs and guns, spread first to certain areas. The cases studied here tended to affect mostly poor people and ethnic minorities first.
These researchers suggest that using analytic software from the field of medical geography eventually might help police identify emerging crime hotspots.
The researchers also identified areas of Newark that had no homicide clusters during the study's time frame. They want to learn why those communities are more resistant. Today's program was made possible in part by our friends at Futurity.org. Earth Sky is a clear voice for science.
We're at EarthSky.org.
Thank you. The National Labor Relations Act was a New Deal initiative which helped save American capitalism by creating a process which would protect the rights of employees and employers. This was before NAFTA, GATT, and the WTO, which tore legal rights for workers apart, moved millions of jobs out of the U.S. Yes, we stand for the workers at Boeing in Washington State, but we also stand for the workers at Boeing in South Carolina, because they will have no recourse if Boeing wants to move jobs to China. You can't say you want to create jobs here at home while destroying the rights of workers to organize, the right to collective bargaining. These are basic rights in a democratic society. You can't say you want to protect American jobs and not protect American workers. Take away workers' rights to free speech, take away workers' rights to due process, and you create a new class of slave laborers here in the United States who are helpless to stop the movement of jobs out of America.
Check out the website, TheRickSmithShow.com. Questions, comments, something on your mind, you can email me, Rick at TheRickSmithShow.com. A new report out by the Department of Housing and Urban Development points out that the national homeless population has remained steady from 2011 to 2012. Good news, though, in the report is that the homeless veterans, the folks who have served our country and our home, that has gone down 17% since 2009. Look, if you've got the political will, we could easily end homelessness. But again, it comes down to, do you have the will? And I look at what went on in Michigan. I look at this and I look at all Wisconsin and Ohio and Maine and Indiana and all of these states to go after workers' rights, to go after women's rights. All of this divisiveness, all of this tearing us apart, all of this dividing and pitting us against each other. Have they solved any of our problems? Homelessness for veterans has come down, but it's steady for everybody else. Poverty, still extraordinarily high. We could easily solve these problems, but we have to focus on divisive stuff first. 2010, they said jobs, jobs, jobs. I have yet to see a bill. All I see is, hey, if we steal wages from workers, then companies will have more money. Doesn't say that they're going to create jobs, just that there'll be more profit. But the question then becomes is once they have more profit, where does that money go? Because it's coming out of the pockets of workers who buys their products. Well, that's right, nobody. You know, we could end homelessness in this country, completely end it. We could eradicate homelessness in the U.S. for the same amount of money that we give to the oil industry in subsidies. Same money. We could easily end homelessness. In fact, we could end homelessness three or four times over if we eliminated the capital gains tax handouts. Easy. We could eliminate homelessness if we eliminated corporate meals and entertainment write-offs. So when the bigwigs take their clients to a ball game, got a fairly wealthy uncle, for years has had tickets to see the various sports teams in the area that he lives in. Big loge boxes at the arena and at the stadium. You pay for that. I pay for that. It writes that off. It's the entertainment expense. They go out to fancy meals, write it all off. Who pays it? We do. We could easily end homelessness. Just that one little thing. So when I hear the Boehners of the world and I hear the the Republicans saying, "Well, you know, we'll cut loopholes," and not telling us which. Well, I can give you a couple. I can come up with a bunch of stuff we could be cutting. You know, if we have the will in this country, and it does, it comes down to will. It has to come down to us wanting to do it. We could end homelessness. Simple. In fact, we spend more on Christmas decorations and flowers than it would cost to end homelessness in this country. And you stop and you think about that. I mean, we spend more on lights and bulbs and stuff that we hang outside than we spend on doing, because, you know, I'm told we're a Christian nation. We spend more on oil subsidies and on light bulbs for Christmas trees than we spend on homelessness. And, you know, the whole Christian nation thing always spins through my head because I constantly have the same conversation with my religious friends who say, well, government shouldn't be doing these things. They shouldn't be taking care of the poor. They shouldn't be feeding the hungry. That's charity. That's religion. And I'd say, well, no one's stopping them from doing it. You're quite free to go ahead and do it. The reality is that they haven't and they won't because they can't. You know, when I see homeless people on the street, you want to help them. One person can't do it. Collectively, as a nation, if we had the will, we could quite easily do it. But again, you know, do we have the will? And this especially, the holiday season, where we're supposed to be thinking a little bit more, and this is what blows my mind about what's going on in D.C. You know, this is the holiday season where we're supposed to be thinking about the poor and supposed to be thinking about others and all of that that comes along with the joy of the season. And here we're literally talking about taking food out of the mouths of children so that billionaires can have more and they can turn around and use it against us to keep us divided and push things like the No Rights at Work agenda there in Michigan. I mean, I guess they know we're stupid. They don't think it. They know. Amazing stuff. If you missed any portion of the program, RickSmithShow.com. That's where you go to get the podcast. Stitcher. Get it on your smartphone. Take the program on the go. Quick break. Back with hour two. You are listening to the Rick Smith Show on WIOO 97.9 Carlisle and 93.9 Shippensburg. We're back live in the studio tonight and every weeknight from 9 to midnight. Got something on your mind? Give us a call, 1-888-520-RICK. That's 1-888-520-7425.
You're listening to WIN, Workers Independent News, a production of Diversified Media Enterprises. I'm Doug Cunningham. Michigan's congressional delegation met with Governor Rick Snyder on Monday, asking him to veto or at least delay a vote on right-to-work legislation that might soon be on his desk. Jesse Russell reports.
The legislation would allow workers to benefit from contracts negotiated by unions, even if they choose not to pay union dues. According to Congressman Carl Levin, Snyder expressed he would seriously consider the request from the congressional Democrats representing the state. President Barack Obama stepped into the fight during a visit to a Daimler Detroit diesel plant in the state on Monday. He said right-to-work laws have little to do with economics, but instead have everything to do with politics.
What's going to make us succeed is we got the best workers, well-trained, reliable, productive, low turnover, healthy. That's what makes us strong. And it also is what allows our workers then to buy the products that we make. Because they got enough money in their pockets.
Ulico CEO Ed Smith says the only labor-owned finance and insurance company in the U.S. is celebrating its 85th year and looking forward to the next 85. Smith says Ulico's investments, especially in commercial real estate over the past 35 years, help finance construction projects that create good union jobs and protect workers while providing solid investment returns on pension funds.
Our union-only language that we require in our loan documents requires a 100% union workforce on building and construction and maintenance of the the product. So over those 35 years, we've created over 500 million hours of work for building tradespeople. Jobs with good union wages, full family health care, defined benefit pension, training and apprenticeship. So it's very, very successful. Double bottom line, as I like to call it, that we create with our J for Jobs.
Smith says union workers bring an awful lot to the economic table, and in economic investments, the rights of workers must be protected.
They bring a skilled workforce that's second to none. You know, in our J for Jobs, you know, those are create the building trade jobs. We always say it's a job done right the first time, because you got skilled workers who've been through training and apprenticeship programs, best in the world, that are on those projects. So there's real value.
ULICO will also be involved in infrastructure projects through a fund established this year. Smith says as infrastructure investments come in to rebuild crumbling infrastructure in America, it's important that workers not get the short end of the stick on those investments. This newscast made possible in part through underwriting from the National Association of Letter Carriers. You've been listening to WIN, Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
The proud defender of the American dream, Rick Smith.
Welcome back to the second hour of the Rick Smith Show. Check out the website, therickSmithShow.com. Again, if you missed any portion of the program, the podcast is there at the website for your entertainment, your enjoyment, your convenience. Also, smartphone, Stitcher, take the program on the go. So at the end of this month, just a few short days away, 2.1 million people. You want to talk about a fiscal cliff? 2.1 million people could lose their jobless benefits, lose their unemployment benefits because, well, Congress... If they don't extend the emergency unemployment benefits, there's the cliff. Those people are over it, done, gone. And over the next 3 months, another million people or more are going to lose those benefits. Right now, we've got about 5 million people who have been out of work for longer than 6 months. So when I see things that, like, went on in Michigan today, I keep going, what happened from 2002 to today when it was all about jobs? What happened to jobs, jobs, jobs? Seem to forget that. I'll tell you how you... You know, you help the jobs picture. The CBO had a study last month. You may remember me talking about it, that if we extend those benefits for that 2.1 million people at the end of this month, they're going to go over the fiscal cliff, and the million more over the next 3 months. If we extend those benefits, it's going to add about 300,000 jobs to this economy. That's what we should be doing first and foremost. We should be then extending those tax cuts for the 98% of us. Sorry, 2%. Times are tough. Like Boehner says, we're broke. We can't afford you anymore. Time for you to pay your fair share. Not doing what they did in Michigan. Not doing what they've done to workers and to women in this country. Got to stop. And it's got to stop. Here to help me rage, I've asked my good friend Abe Amoros, Legislative Director for Pennsylvania for the Laborers International Union, LIUNA. Abe, thanks for taking time for me.
Oh, you're welcome, Rick. Good to be on with you.
I am absolutely enraged today. I mean, you look at the facts. You look at, you know, you want to talk about a fiscal cliff, 2.1 million people in less than a half a month going to go over that cliff. And yet, look what they did in Michigan.
It's absolutely reprehensible what they did in Michigan. Unconscionable. You know, I can't stand that phrase, right to work. You know, it sounds like a positive change in a weak economy, but the phrase and the concept are the results are anything but. I mean, it suppresses wages, it cuts health care benefits, it makes poor people poor, and makes a decent pension impossible to come by for Pennsylvania workers. I mean, for workers in Michigan or workers everywhere. Right to work legislation is a flawed premise. And what really gets me angry, Rick, is it's based upon the notion of getting something for nothing.
Yep.
Now, does that sound familiar to you? This last election, the Republicans and the conservatives were railing against those who were getting something for nothing. And now, right-to-work legislation is exactly what that is. It's getting all of the benefits from a collective bargaining agreement without paying for it. It's the same thing as saying, yes, I want police and fire protection, but I'm not going to pay taxes. I mean, it's absolutely crazy, and the outrage is palpable.
You know, and the thing that gets me is I don't call it right to work. It's the no rights at work agenda that
right.
the right has been throwing through. But I keep asking the question, okay, right to work. What right and what work are we talking about? Because there are no rights with it, and there's obviously no work because we've got 5 million people who have been unemployed for longer than 6 months. We've got unemployment problems. Where are the jobs bills that we were promised? Because this does nothing to create jobs.
No, it absolutely doesn't. All it does is it depresses wages, depresses people, and really hurts economies. I mean, communities are going to suffer as a result of this. You're going to see soup kitchens fill up in places that soup kitchens shouldn't even exist. And, you know, I don't understand why they would embrace this faulty concept. I mean, why would we want to see states as poor as Alabama, as poor as Louisiana, as poor as Mississippi, just to name a few? Why would any state the size of Michigan or the size of any other state want to join those? I mean, let's look at some of these facts. For instance, Oklahoma lost 22,000 manufacturing jobs since it became a right-to-work state. Why a state legislature would embrace this notion to hurt its citizenry is beyond me. I mean, as you can see, I'm having a hard time putting all this into words because my outrage is, it just makes my blood boil.
And it should. I mean, especially you're someone who's spent a little time in government. You have someone who's watched the process as a legislative director there. You understand the rule of law and the procedure. And you look at what happened in Michigan, the people who told us, you know, it's all about oversight and we're going to have transparency and accountability. What they did last Thursday, to me, is almost, it's criminal.
That's right. It's absolutely criminal. And everyone that participated in that debacle should be held responsible for their horrific actions, because trimming workers' paychecks should be the last thing that any legislature, any elected official, or any decent human being should do. It is just absolutely mind-boggling. And I'll tell you what, I'm so disappointed that they got away with it, Rick. I really did. And you know, it's fair warning to the rest of us. Now, there have been a couple news stories recently where Governor Corbett has been quoted as saying, well, I'm not interested in pursuing that path. But we still have a very conservative House of Representatives that is interested in doing the same thing here in Pennsylvania. And just because the governor claims that he will not support this legislation, he has a caveat, Rick, and it's basically, well, you know, if it gets to my desk, I will sign it. And 2 years ago, there was a series of bills, House Bill 50, 51, 52, and 53, that embraced all this right-to-work nonsense. Now, luckily, it was basically brushed under the rug. However, when something like this happens in a major industrial state like Michigan, sometimes those legislatures start to raise their eyebrows and say, if it could fly in Michigan, maybe it could fly in Pennsylvania. So beware that despite news accounts that Governor Corbett would not be pushing something like this, it doesn't mean that a Republican-controlled legislature, like we have here in Pennsylvania, would not be licking its chops.
And the other part of this is
to be very vigilant.
And the other part of this is you look at the big moneyed people who are behind this, the Koch brothers and the DeVos family, if you, just to name two, the people who really put a lot of money in this. Those are players here in Pennsylvania as well. I mean, the Kochs with Americans for Prosperity, you know, that front group. And of course, the DeVos people with the school privatization and the charters and all that in Philadelphia and across this state. The big money's here as well. So it isn't that heavy of a lift for them to pour a bunch of resource here as well.
No, that's exactly right, because money talks, especially on the right side, meaning the right wing. You know, we have to be very vigilant to stay on top of this, to make sure that if we catch a whiff that this is taking place, we have to send our members to the state legislature, to individual members, and say, don't even think about pulling something like this in Pennsylvania. We also have to have our facts behind us in terms of the economic impact it would have on communities. I mean, this would put such a strain on nonprofits in terms of providing services to the poor or the people that you're going to make poor as a result of this. So, you know, getting something for nothing. They always complain about it, but here we go with right-to-work legislation, you know, getting your brother's benefits but paying nothing into it. No, That's just morally reprehensible.
Yeah, and look, I mean, the as you pointed out, the rhetoric that they use, the phraseology that they use, it all sounds so logical and so common sense, based in common sense. Well, I should have the right. Why should I be part of that? I mean, look, they focus group test this stuff. They get it. So that's the question I have for you is somebody who's never going to be a member of a union, someone who's never going to do the job or, you know, never going to be part of it. Why should they care? Why should this be an issue for them? Why should my wife, who's never going to be a union member, why should she care?
Well, because when you have good paying jobs that unions create, that also bleeds into the rest of the economy because it creates competition. And when you have good paying jobs, good union jobs, it forces other employers to take a look and say, I've got good, happy employees that are really productive and helping my bottom line, and I'm paying them a fair and decent wage. So that's going to bleed into the rest of the economy, and there might be some non-union contractors, for instance, who want to hire union employees who get the job done on time, under budget, and make things happen. I mean, there's just a tremendous ripple effect when you pay people a decent, livable wage, because, you know, we're all consumers as well. We buy cars, we buy houses, we put our kids through school as well, we buy them clothes and food. All of those things are factors that help economies, that help economies grow and sustain themselves. So, you know, if you don't belong to a union, that doesn't mean that your job won't be impacted by good paying family sustaining wages.
Yeah, as I always say, you know, you look at this stuff and you're going one of two directions. You're either spiraling up or you're spiraling down. And you look at what happened in Michigan today, that is definitely spiraling us downward. And it's going to pull all of us down. So either you're going to propose things that are going to pull us all up or, like in the case of Michigan, pull us all down.
That's exactly right. It's a race to the bottom, Rick. It is. And again, my fear is that a major industrial state, major manufacturing state such as Michigan, did the unthinkable, and that means it could happen anywhere, and that means we have to stay vigilant, and we have to say to the legislature, don't even think about pulling a stunt like that in Pennsylvania, or you will pay dearly at the ballot box. I mean, I can't stress that enough.
And that comes back to, you know, what we're talking about here. We need to be talking to folks, and do you see that conversation being had here in the state? Do you see folks saying, hey, you know what, we see this craziness in Wisconsin and Ohio and in Michigan, and it hasn't helped them. They're not setting the world on fire. We shouldn't be going down that road. Do you see that conversation being had?
I do. I see that conversation being had, but I got to tell you, Rick, I don't see it enough. And I don't see the buzz that it needs to generate in Pennsylvania. And I really hope that we start to really take that message home to our members. And like you said, you know, not all members, not everybody has a union job. But everyone has to understand that if we go down this path and we start attacking good-paying family-sustaining wages, what's going to happen is it's going to have a tremendous negative impact on the entire state economy. So attacking union workers and making them the scapegoat, making them look like the bad guys, is really the wrong strategy, and we really need to make sure that our members understand that, that members of the general public understand it, but above all, the legislature, so they don't get cute and fancy and try something like this in the spring.
Yeah, because I worry that once, you know, as you pointed out, once the lottery, once they privatize and they do all the things, all the ugliness they want to do there, they'll turn their sights again back towards workers, back towards women, back towards destroying and privatizing more education. Just a whole lot of ugliness here in the coming months.
That's right. It's a slippery slope, and we cannot allow it to happen.
All right, Abe, I appreciate the time. It was great talking with you.
Likewise.
I'd love to have you back again soon.
You got it.
I'm going to take a quick break. I'm going to rage a little bit during the break, and I'll be right back. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
Not right wing, just right. The Rick Smith Show.
In the scramble to fix the federal deficit, one of Washington's worst ideas is widely considered by political elites, including some Democrats, to be a good idea, even a painless fix. The idea is to raise the age of eligibility for both Social Security and Medicare, shoving it from 65 to 67 or beyond. After all, goes Washington's conventional wisdom, people live so much longer now, so it won't hurt to postpone eligibility and save a couple of years of taxpayer outlays to people. But, as economist and columnist Paul Krugman has pointed out, this bit of conventional wisdom is merely conventional, in the sense of trite. While life expectancy has gone up on average, it has not increased much for working stiffs, especially tens of millions of lower-wage and poorer workers. Unlike being a member of Congress, the work that these people do tends to require heavy lifting, which can make you old fast. Requiring them to do it even deeper into old age and to wait longer for medical assistance is, as Krugman bluntly calls it, cruel. Bear in mind, too, that working-class families are precisely the people who count on Social Security and Medicare. They don't have the socialized medical benefits and golden pensions that those pampered conventional wisdom spouters in Congress get. Oh, one more thing. The purported savings from this fix are so minimal as to be illusory. In fact, shoving ill or crippled elderly workers out of the cost-effective Medicare system will jack up America's health care costs. This is Jim Hightower saying, so raising the retirement age is gratuitous as well as cruel, but mostly it's severely ignorant. What's at work here is a policy-making elite that includes no working-class people, so it can cluelessly believe that making the lives of these Americans worse is painless.
What do the corporate powers from Wall Street to Walmart have in common? They hate the Hightower Lowdown. You can see why at www.hightowerlowdown.org.
Ganley Law is a proud sponsor of the Rick Smith Show. To better serve you, Ganley Law has 9 offices throughout Pennsylvania. Call our main office in Waynesboro. If we think we can help you, we'll schedule a time and place that is convenient for you for a confidential initial consultation at no charge. At Ganley Law, you pay no retainer and no attorney fees unless we are successful in bringing your claim. Our experienced attorneys, Charles Ganley and Deborah Packer, will fight for your rights. If you face a work-related injury, an occupational disease such as hearing loss, work-related hepatitis, or HIV, sexual harassment, or employment discrimination, call Ganley Law. That's toll-free statewide at 1-888-FIGHT-17. That's 1-888-4817. Ganley Law, fighting for workers' rights, fighting for your rights.
Also at GanleyLaw.com.
We need a third party to save this country. Not Ron Paul and the Ron Paulites. No, we need a legitimate third party to challenge the current system that we have. Because I don't believe that the Republican Party, although I ran as a Republican, I have been voting Republican for decades, I don't believe the Republican Party has the ability to rebrand itself.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Check out the website, thericksmithshow.com. You know, as Abe pointed out there a second ago, you know, what this is really about is, these are about working people getting poorer. This is about taking from the people who produce. This is about taking from the working class of this country and then giving them really nothing in return. And you see what the Republicans are doing on the national level, wanting to gut food stamps, gut the supplemental nutrition program, literally taking food out of the mouths of children so that we can enrich the very, very wealthy. And I look at it here on the state level, and we've talked to a couple employees who work for UPMC. We've talked to some folks who are trying to unionize and trying to make their working conditions better and their wage structure better. And I saw this story today that, man, you just sit there and you shake your head and you go, really, this huge, extremely profitable, well, non-profit, I guess they are, huge money, who are trying to deny their workers the right to just a little bit of the wealth that they create. I don't even know how to begin to tell you this. I don't even really, it is one of these things that just leaves me speechless. So I'm just going to lay it out. You got these workers who are trying to unionize because they make crummy wages. They're in the poverty wrench. So UPMC, who's getting beat up, because those workers come on programs like mine and they say, look, I'm working my butt off and yet I've still got to go and I've got to ask the government for heating assistance or food stamps. I've got to go to a food bank to get food to put on the table so I can feed my family. So what does UPMC do? They don't raise the wages so that the workers can afford to buy their, no. They don't pay their workers reasonably. No, they set up a food bank. It's the UPMC Cares program. So it's wonderful. They're starting a food bank for the employees. The flyer they threw out and they put in their newsletter, 'tis the season to help our community. They say they're asking employees to take part in activities that demonstrate our caring and compassion for our patients, families, and the colleagues we work with every day. One of these 'tis the season activities is an opportunity to donate non-perishable food items to stock employee food pantries that will be established on both UPMC's Presbyterian campus and at UPMC's Shadyside. The pantries will be open later this month, giving employees in need sufficient time to pick up items they and their families can use to make the holidays brighter. Oh, thank you, UPMC. That is so thoughtful of you. So thoughtful. And I like what the one woman that they quoted in the article said. She goes, look, I don't need them to pick out my food for me. I need them to pay me a better wage so I can pick it out for myself. And she's right. It's demeaning. It's embarrassing. And there's something seriously wrong. That in a country where you go to work and you punch the clock and you work your behind off, that a company the size of UPMC who pays their CEOs millions of dollars and they enrich the boards of directors and they've got all these high... that the folks who clean up and the people who take care of the patients and that they've got to go to a food bank. And the woman that they interviewed said, you know, I go to a food bank where nobody knows me because I feel embarrassed. And here's the reality, folks. If you need to get help, there's no embarrassing in that. There's no embarrassment for this woman. There should be none of that. The slap in the face is that this woman has worked for UPMC for 9 years. And yet she doesn't make enough to get her out of poverty. And their charity is to set up a food bank so that employees who work for the same company can donate to her? Is this the benevolent corporation? Is this what we've given them tax-exempt status for? Is this what we give these huge multinational corporations all of this power to be able to? Is this it? You know, yesterday we talked about Bloomberg. All right, we talked about the Bloomberg story about Google, where their profits through the roof. In fact, Google has avoided, according to Bloomberg News, about $2 billion in worldwide taxes in 2011 by shifting about $9.8 billion in revenue to Bermuda. You know, one of these tax havens. And you look at all of these companies that are doing this. You look at Mitt Romney, you know, ran on. Hey, well, I got 14% tax. And what we have to realize is that while companies like Google, who can hide their taxes, and companies like UPMC, who don't pay their workers, make them go to food banks, make them ask for help from the government, you know, that costs all of us. And at some point, we need to start having that conversation about Who's gonna pay the freight? Because people have to realize somebody's got to pay. You know, look at the fact that corporate profits skyrocketed while the taxes that they pay are plummeting. You know, it used to be back in the 50s, you know, the good socialist days of Dwight David Eisenhower. Corporations paid about 32% of the tax bill. All the money that came into the government, about 32% came from corporations. Now it's less than, it's like 7.5%, less than 8%. We've allowed this shift to happen. And the problem is the shift is onto those who can least afford it, the low-wage workforce. And now what they've done in Michigan is going to make sure that the folks in Michigan are going to be in the same situation that this woman's in, working for crummy wages and crummy conditions. But you know what? All the other jobs are there, too. That's what this No Rights at Work agenda is all about. It's about pulling us all down to where we're all going to be in that situation. And you better damn well hope that there's a solid minimum wage. You better damn well hope that there's some national health care. You better damn well hope that there's some heating assistance and that there are food stamps. And I tell some of my right-wing friends, don't wish that stuff off. Because the policies you're advocating, the stuff that your party's pursuing, the stuff that they're doing, the stuff like they've done in Michigan, we're all going to need it. Because that's the only way we're going to eat. And oh, you're being dramatic, Rick. Mark my words. That's the desperation that they want to recreate. And I go back, because you can just read the history. Read the history of the 1880s, 1890s. Read the history of the labor movement. Read the history of the coal mines. And the abject poverty. And you go, oh, that was just 100 years ago. I worked with a guy, just, you know, 10 or 12 years older than me. Said when he got back from Vietnam, he had squirreled away a little bit of money. And when he got home, up into the coal regions here in Pennsylvania, he paid the company off. Because the family had lived on... in the little company town, still into the late 60s, lived in the company town. His family for four generations had been indebted to that company their entire lives. When he came back and he took that money that he got after coming back from Vietnam and paid off his father's debt, that was the first time, and I think he said it was four generations, that they didn't owe money to that company. We're going back to that. And the sad reality is, and maybe this is, and I say it's by design. We haven't learned labor's history. We haven't learned the history of our own past. We haven't learned the history of our region. We better hurry and we better do it quick. Because what they did this for the last week in Michigan could be right here. And what a tragedy that would be. And there's part of me that says maybe this is what we need. Maybe it's what we deserve. Maybe it's what has to happen before we then look at each other and say, you know what, we're not the enemy. We're the solution. The enemy are those people at the top. The enemy is the Koch brothers. The enemy is the DeVosses. The enemy is the billionaire class. That's the enemy. Quick break, right back after this. But after all, something is different.
Rock and roll. Not right wing, just right. The Rick Smith Show.
Would you dive 14 feet deep in the Susquehanna to keep a bridge safe? Would you spend night after night with prisoners to keep your community safe? Would you spend Christmas Eve plowing snow to keep roads safe? AFSCME members do. Men and women who choose to serve in public service. Mine inspectors, 911 dispatchers, healthcare workers, parole agents. You may not think about them, but no, they're all thinking about you. This message brought to you by AFSCME Council 13.
AFSCME Council 13 members, did you know that you have voluntary benefits available to you that you can pay for through the ease of payroll deduction? AFSCME Council 13 offers a voluntary benefits package to help provide money when you or a covered family member incurs one of these life events, accidents, critical illness, disability, or death, no one can avoid life's unfortunate situations. However, AFSCME Council 13 has provided you with the opportunity to ease the financial burden on your family by preparing now. Find out more about Trustmark's voluntary benefits. BBS Benefit Solutions can help you get the security you need. Call BBS at 1-866-902-2561. Again, call BBS at 1-866-902-2561.
Earth, sky.
Homicide moves through a community like an infectious disease. That's according to a study published in the journal Justice Quarterly in late 2012.
The researchers say their findings could help police track and even prevent murders. Using Newark, New Jersey as a pilot case, researchers from Michigan State University's School of Criminal Justice applied public health tracking methods to the city's more than 2,000 homicides between the years 1982 and 2008.
They found the killings weren't randomly located. Instead, they followed a pattern evolving from the city's center and moving southward and westward over time. Influenza spreads to susceptible groups in a certain pattern. For example, children and the elderly are affected soonest.
Much like a flu, homicide clusters in Newark, often fueled by gangs and guns, spread first to certain areas. The cases studied here tended to affect mostly poor people and ethnic minorities first.
These researchers suggest that using analytic software from the field of medical geography eventually might help police identify emerging crime hotspots.
The researchers also identified areas of Newark that had no homicide clusters during the study's time frame. They want to learn why those communities are more resistant. Today's program was made possible in part by our friends at Futurity.org. Earth Sky is a clear voice for science.
We're at EarthSky.org.
Volkswagen just invested in Tennessee in a right-to-work state at a low cost with less health care. Why should we prop others up when other companies can compete in this marketplace? It's time to let these people learn the lesson
the
hard way.
At a low cost with less health care. That's the selling point. Hey, bring your jobs here. You can cheat your workers and no health care, no pensions. Is that America? Is that the American dream? Is that the middle class? No, it's not. It's not what my grandparents' generation fought for. You know, I go back and I read through the contracts that my grandparents had during their working years. And, you know, I keep the master freight agreement on my desk from my grandfather's. It was 1974 to 1979. In today's dollars, they were making $31 an hour. Full benefits, full pension. And what you get is you got the right wing who say, well, we could never go back to that. Why not? Well, we can't because we need to keep giving huge tax cuts and we need to keep, you know, shareholders and blah, 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 blah. You know, the problem what's going on in this country is we've allowed Wall Street to take too much of the national wealth. We've allowed those bloodsuckers on Wall Street to take too much. And, you know, I loved having those conversations with my Tea Party friends. And you don't hear many Tea Party people calling. You don't hear many Tea Party people defending the wealth class. But you heard them running around because there was a nice soundbite. You know, the Glenn Becks of the world told them, oh, those people, they want to redistribute wealth. You're damn right I do. And I'm quite open and quite honest about it. I'd like to redistribute it back to the way it was when this country had a strong, prosperous middle class and everybody did better. You see, because if the wealth is coming, this isn't rocket science. This isn't difficult to figure out. If you have a wealth class that controls so much of the wealth that they're not spending it, then your economy will shrink. And I remember right before the grand collapse, I had written an op-ed and someone had responded to it saying, well, what Mr. Smith doesn't understand is wealth is not finite, it can be infinite. And I don't believe that. There are only so many resources. the pie is so big. And even as the pie grows, does your portion of it shrink? And you look at over the years, what's happened is the share that's gone to workers has shrunk. And I, you know, I point to this, you know, the reality. The Century Foundation put out a chart the other day on corporate tax, income tax. And it shows that, you know, hey, you know, they used to pay a very high share, now close to nothing. Profits never higher, taxation never lower. Corporate earnings never higher, wages as a percentage of GDP never lower. The good things for corporations, through the roof. The bad things for workers, through the floor. It doesn't take a genius to figure out that there's got to be somewhere in the middle. I'm not against people making a profit. I'm not against, I think companies have to be profitable. And I agree with Samuel Gompers, the founder of the American Federation of Labor, who said it should be criminal that a corporation doesn't operate at a profit. But here's the thing. The pendulum, folks, has just swung way too far. We've gone to too many business-friendly policies. We've given too many subsidies. We've given too many breaks. We've given too much to the too few at the expense of the too many. And I go back to my redistribution argument. Look, the reality is, and Abraham Lincoln, and you know, during the arguments this morning in Michigan, they quoted Lincoln saying, you know what, capital came first. Your labor came first. Capital could have only benefited from labor had it not existed first. Labor is superior to capital. And I look at this and I go, you know, we've given these breaks, we've given these handouts, we've given these subsidies, we've given all of the special treatment to the wealth class. And what have they done? You know, I go back to the interview I did yesterday with Robert Pullen and about his book, Back to Full Employment, where he talks about, look, you know what? The wealth class is sitting on trillions of dollars. The corporate class is sitting on trillions of dollars. The financial institutions sitting on $1.6 trillion, money that they got from the Federal Reserve for almost nothing, that they're sitting on waiting for the next bubble so they can jump on it and profit from it. They're not doing what we're told that they were going to. We were told, you know, they're going to create jobs with it. That's why we have to give them all of this stuff. That's why we have to give money to the job creators, to the wealth class, because they know what to do with it. But the reality is that they don't. And what they do is they hold us hostage. Time and time again. I look at what's going on in Oregon right now. The governor, a Democrat, called a special session of the legislature today so that the state could consider handing Nike a huge handout, or what they're calling tax certainty. Because Nike says, well, we're going to create some jobs here in the state, but you know, there are other states who are willing to give us, you know, whatever we want. So we could take on those 500 jobs and go, oh, maybe to Michigan, where they'll give us whatever the hell we want. What we've allowed to happen, and it's our fault, because we fall for the nonsense. We fall for the ribbon cutting ceremonies and the headlines. Oh, Governor Corbett brought 500 jobs from here. It didn't say that he stole it, that they came from somewhere else, and that somewhere else lost 500 jobs. Like the cracker plant, love that. One of my favorite. They say, oh, we're going to bring these 500, potentially 500 jobs to this plant where we had to give up 400 jobs, so that we could have them. And, oh, by the way, it's only $1.7 billion for a plant they were going to build there anyway. And that's my problem with them. I'm not against them building a plant. Let them build a damn plant. I shouldn't be paying $1.7 billion away from it. It shouldn't be coming out of education funding. It shouldn't be coming out of my kids' future. And this is what's going on, not just in Oregon, but in every state. Because the federal government has abdicated their responsibility to make sure that commerce is overseen. So we've got this beggar thy neighbor economic development where, hey, we need to pass the no rights at work agenda so we can steal jobs from the next state. That's the argument. I mean, think about it. That's the argument. The argument is, well, we need to do this. We need to have lower wages, less health care. Like Zach Womp said, the whole reason they went to auto industry went to Tennessee and not Michigan, lower wages. We could screw the workers. And, oh, by the way, they don't have a voice. We can fire them anytime we want. And we can do anything we want, conditions, anything we want. Those people don't have a voice. And what did it do? It pulled down the unionized workers. So what you've got is you've got this pulling down. You've got this spiral downward. And maybe that's what has to happen. You know, maybe the Pat Toomey mentality of a harder down, you know, when the housing bubble hit, maybe we needed that hard down. Maybe we need a dose of conservative reality where screw you, brother, you're on your own. Where there is nothing under our feet. There's no net. There's no safety. There's no community. You're on your own. I mean, think about what they're pushing. And I go back to this thing with Nike. And the thing that drives me nuts about Nike is they've never produced a product in the U.S. that I know of. They've never produced a tennis shoe in the U.S. In fact, now they're making most of their stuff, as I understand, in Vietnam. Cheap country. But here they are. An Oregon-based apparel company. They don't make anything here. That's where they shuffle papers. Now, what they're saying is look, you know, Nike claims they're going to create 500 jobs. They've promised. And they said, well, you know, we could have this big boost to the Oregon economy. The question I have is there any guarantee? I mean, I look at all of these promises that these corporations make. You know, when Corbett gave the $1.7 billion to the cracker plant, they threw out these huge numbers. Oh, we're going to create 20,000 jobs, create 10,000 jobs. We're going to pay thousands of jobs. It's going to pay for itself. And then, you know, after it went through, kind of walking back from that. Well, maybe not that. We're not really sure. Kind of reminds me of, you know, the wine and spirit shops that they tried to privatize, which I guarantee you will come up again. But if you remember right from the start, they said, oh, we're going to make $2 billion off the sale of the public's asset. $2 billion is going to help fill our gap. Then it went, 1.7 maybe. Oh, well, maybe that was a bit optimistic. Maybe 1.4. No, hold on. Maybe 1 billion. And then you get down to it, maybe 500 million. And you go, but that's what we bring in one year in taxes and revenue. Why would we sell something for 1 year? Well, it's core functions. It's always something. And you know who ends up holding the bag financially? You and me. We're getting ripped off every day by these politicians, these pro-corporate, on both sides of the aisle, but mostly the Republicans. We're getting ripped off, robbed blind. And at some point, I'm hoping that, you know, we go, what did Bush say? Fool me once, shame on you. Fool me again. You can't get fooled again. Well, we seem to keep getting fooled over and over and over again. Because every time I see these beggar thy neighbor schemes, what ends up happening? Well, you end up seeing situations where workers are worse off, communities are worse off, and our children are worse off. And it's all part of the no rights at work agenda. It's all part of denying workers rights and stealing wages and pulling us all down. Because you look at the states that have the no rights at work agenda. You look at those, less funding for education, less funding for social programs. And, oh, by the way, they get more subsidies from the federal government. So maybe, I mean, look, had Michigan made that argument saying, look, you know, we don't get enough money from the federal government, and we're going to do this so that we're poor enough that we get more money from the feds, I could see that as an argument. Some people may even buy it. It's a bad argument, but, hey, it's reality. But this idea that, oh, it's going to create jobs, even though the governor himself said, not going to do it. Don't have any numbers, don't have any statistics. We know Oklahoma lost manufacturing jobs. They keep saying Indiana's created them. Haven't seen it, but they keep saying it enough. You know, At some point, I hope we get it. Just a thought. Let's take a quick break. Right back after this. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
Is that old washer or dryer on the fritz and you don't have the bucks for a new one?
Call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
You say that old refrigerator isn't refrigerating so well.
Call Mike at Klein's, 243-3211.
How about a bunch of money to replace your old stove or microwave?
Again, save the cost of a new one. Just call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
Here at the radio station, we call Mike our resident mechanical and electronics genius. Have you ever met someone who can literally fix anything? That's Mike.
Call him at 243-3211.
You'd be amazed to learn how well many of the older appliances were made. A simple repair might give you another 5, 10, or even 20 years of service from that old washer, dryer, stove, or refrigerator at a fraction of the cost of a new one. Mike repairs TVs and electronics, too.
So call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
Let Mike fix it right, and you pocket the savings.
That's 243-3211 for Mike at Klein's Appliances Repair Service.
AFSCME Council 13 members, did you know that you have voluntary benefits available to you that you can pay for through the ease of payroll deduction? AFSCME Council 13 offers a voluntary benefits package to help provide money when you or a covered family member incurs one of these life events, accidents, critical illness, disability, or death. No one can avoid life's unfortunate situations. However, AFSCME Council 13 has provided you with the opportunity to ease the financial burden on your family by preparing now. Find out more about Trustmark's voluntary benefits. BBS Benefit Solutions can help you get the security you need. Call BBS at 1-866-902-2561. Again, call BBS at 1-866-902-2561.
Ganley Law is a proud sponsor of The Rick Smith Show. To better serve you, Ganley Law has 9 offices throughout Pennsylvania. Call our main office in Waynesboro. If we think we can help you, we'll schedule a time and place that is convenient for you for a confidential initial consultation at no charge. At Ganley Law, you pay no retainer and no attorney fees unless we are successful in bringing your claim. Our experienced attorneys, Charles Ganley and Deborah Packer, will fight for your rights. If you face a work-related injury, an occupational disease such as hearing loss, work-related hepatitis, or HIV, sexual harassment, or employment discrimination, call Ganley Law. That's toll-free statewide at 1-888-FIGHT-17. That's 1-888-334-4817. Ganley Law, fighting for workers' rights, fighting for your rights.
Also at GanleyLaw.com.
Organizing America 3 hours each night. The Rick Smith Show. I'll give my head to the new constitution. Think about
Show. Check out the website, TheRickSmithShow.com. Questions, comments, something on your mind, you can email me, Rick@TheRickSmithShow.com. So today, back in 1815, President James Madison, he presented Congress with a trade agreement with Great Britain. As you may remember from history class, the War of 1812 had ended. And, well, you know, we decided, hey, let's put out that olive branch. Let's figure out how to work together. So out comes the trade agreement. And the whole, and this is, you know, pretty substantial stuff, because what it then did is it really solidified our presence in the world as a, not only a world power, but an economic power. And we were going to defend our interests. We were going to defend our economic interests. And you go back to the Constitution. You go back to, you know, I have people say, well, you know, we're big military fans. What branch of the military was supposed to be a standing branch? The only one, the Navy. Because, and again, you know, you go back to, they did want to protect shipping lines, which is the only reason we were to have a Navy. They feared a standing army. They feared that kind of power, because you know what? We thought we'd have to use it. Gee, you don't hear many people talking about that as foresight, do you? But you look at the reality, and you know, while today there was a trade agreement, the first one of these trade agreements put to Congress back in 1815, you look at what our trade agreements have done to our nation. You know, we used to fund our government almost entirely with tariffs from trade. Up until the Civil War, as I've read, the vast majority of our funding came from tariffs. Now we have no tariffs. We've torn all that stuff down because we believe in free trade, Rick. Come on. Free trade is going to make us all better. I would argue that it's probably made us all worse. But the trade deficit, again, another congratulations. What, the 1975 is the last time the nation had a trade surplus. So what are you looking at, 25, 30, 37 years in a row we've had trade deficits? Well, the month of October was no different. September, we had a $40.3 billion trade deficit with the rest of the world. October hit another high, $42.2 billion. Now, there's some other right who would say, well, you know, Rick, that's because the recovery's going on. People, consumers are buying that cheap Chinese crap, and profits for American companies going up. But $42.2 billion. You stop and you look at our deficits. You know, for me, you know, I have some problems with our deficits, but my real problem is our trade deficit. If we didn't buy $42.2 billion of stuff from the rest of the world that they didn't buy from us in return, maybe our budget deficits would be less. Because maybe the people who would produce those $42.2 billion worth of goods, maybe they'd be paying taxes and bringing that deficit, just a thought. And a bigger part of this is the trade deficit with one country, and that's China. In the month of October, $29.5 billion. The single largest monthly goods trade deficit in U.S. history. $29.5 billion, up from $29.1 in September. And I sit here and I think about what happened last Thursday, what happened today. And I try and figure out how exactly that, pursuing this no rights at work agenda, by stealing rights from workers here, how that's going to help us. How it's going to help solve our trade problems. $42.2 billion. Now understand how the, and every month I go through this because I think it's that important that we understand. When you look at our debt, when you look at the massive deficits, a lot of it has to do with the fact that we're sending money out of this country. The dollar is the world's reserve currency. So when China or whoever else buys, sends us stuff and we buy it, we actually ship them dollars. So they're sending us trinkets, we're sending them dollars. They're sending us more trinkets, we're sending them more dollars. That money has to come back here. Those dollars have to come back to the U.S. one way or another. They buy our treasuries, they buy our companies, they buy our property, but you know what they're not buying? Well, they're not buying our goods. Or at least $42.2 billion worth of them. I mean, it's another record-breaking year. And yet I hear very few conservatives talking about it. Oh, well, you know, we need free trade. What we need to do. And this is the conservative ideology. The reason, and this is what they believe, the reason our trade deficit is so high is because wages are too high in this country. Benefits are too high. And I can't tell you how many times I've had conservatives tell me that, you know, once we get wages in line, You know, once those working people, those factory workers and those uneducated people, you know, the workers, once they're willing to work for minimum wage with no health care and no pension and no future and no retirement or any of that stuff, then they'll start bringing jobs back. Once those working people are desperate enough where they're going to work 15, 18 hours at straight time, and you know what? They're just going to pay them 8 hours. They'll work the other hours free just because they're grateful to have a job. Then those jobs will come back. Think about where we're heading, folks. The reality is exactly what it is. It's right in front of you. You see it. And while they've pitted us against each other, it's amazing to me how they've set this whole system. They've rigged this game again where the states are competing against each other. Oh, we need to pass this stuff so we can steal from them. And we need to lower our environmental regulations so we can steal from those people. And we need to have lower taxes so we can steal from those people. And all of it is taking us downward, spiraling us downward. Wages lower, benefits lower, educational opportunities lower, infrastructure spending lower, job creation lower, 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 higher unemployment. And well, we got to blame the black guy in the White House for that. Because that's the simple, easy answer. It's not reality. It's not factual. But it's simplistic. And I look at this and I go, you know, and the same thing, what gets me is I look at this Medicare thing. You know, I have a friend who, she's 61 years old, had some health problems. She told me she spends over $2,000 each and every month just so she can have health care. Over $2,000, that's over $24,000 a year in health care. And I think about the average 61-year-old because that's how old she is. I think about the 62-year-old because she says, you know, it's going to go up again 30% next year, and it's going to go up after that, and it's going to go up after that. To by the time she's 65, 66, 67, she's going to be spending $2,500, $3,000 a month on health care. How many working-age people can afford that? And then how many employers can afford that? So when you hear the Republicans say, well, you know, we want to raise that Medicare age, think about who they're harming. They see the demographics. So do the corporations. So do the big insurance companies. They see the demographics. They know where their profit's coming from. We're being screwed, folks. Open the eyes. If you missed any portion of the program, download the podcast there at thericksmithshow.com or get the Stitcher app on your smartphone. Quick break. Back with Hour 3.
Exposing that free trade is never free. The Rick Smith Show.
You are listening to The Rick Smith Show on WIOO 97.9 Carlisle and 93.9 Shippensburg. We're back live in the studio tonight and every weeknight from 9 to midnight. Got something on your mind? Give us a call, 1-888-520-RICK. That's 1-888-520-7425.
You're listening to WIN, Workers Independent News, a production of Diversified Media Enterprises. I'm Doug Cunningham. Michigan's congressional delegation met with Governor Rick Snyder on Monday, asking him to veto or at least delay a vote on right-to-work legislation that might soon be on his desk. Jesse Russell reports.
The legislation would allow workers to benefit from contracts negotiated by unions, even if they choose not to pay union dues. According to Congressman Carl Levin, Snyder expressed he would seriously consider the request from the congressional Democrats representing the state. President Barack Obama stepped into the fight during a visit to a Daimler Detroit diesel plant in the state on Monday. He said right-to-work laws have little to do with economics, but instead have everything to do with politics.
What's going
to
make us succeed is we got the best workers, well-trained, reliable, productive, low turnover, healthy. That's what makes us strong. And it also is what allows our workers then to buy the products that we make. Because they got enough money in their pockets.
Ulico CEO Ed Smith says the only labor-owned finance and insurance company in the U.S. is celebrating its 85th year and looking forward to the next 85. Smith says Ulico's investments, especially in commercial real estate over the past 35 years, help finance construction projects that create good union jobs and protect workers while providing solid investment returns on pension funds.
Our union-only language that we require in our loan documents requires a 100% union workforce on building and construction and maintenance of the product. So over those 35 years, we've created over 500 million hours of work for building tradespeople. Jobs with good union wages, full family health care, defined benefit pension, training and apprenticeship. So it's very, very successful. Double bottom line, as I like to call it, that we create with our J for jobs.
Smith says union workers bring an awful lot to the economic table, and in economic investments, the rights of workers must be protected.
They bring a skilled workforce that's second to none. You know, in our J for jobs, you know, those are create the building trade jobs. We always say it's a job done right the first time, because you got skilled workers who've been through training and apprenticeship programs, best in the world, that are on those projects. So there's real value.
Ulico will also be involved in infrastructure projects through a fund established this year. Smith says as infrastructure investments come in to rebuild crumbling infrastructure in America, it's important that workers not get the short end of the stick on those investments. This newscast made possible in part through underwriting from the National Association of Letter Carriers.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Now, if the Democrats said we had a war on caterpillars, then every mainstream media outlet talked about the fact that Republicans have a war on caterpillars, then we'd have problems with caterpillars. I mean, the fact of the matter is it's a fiction.
Inequality I just ignored. Don't know what a golden rule is for. But I do know a thing or two. And
what a wonderful world would be if, you know, people didn't have any say whatsoever and we could take all their rights. Well, that would be fantastic if the very wealthy in the country could be just like the good old days of the 80s and 90s. The good old 1880s, 1890s, back where the robber barons ruled the roost and didn't have those pesky people they'd have to deal with. Yeah, that would be wonderful, wouldn't it? Probably not, but that's where it looks like we're heading back to. And you look what happened in Michigan today, almost speechless at the overreach, at the excessive use of power. And again, you go back to absolute power corrupts. Well, in this case, absolutely. But it's just not workers' rights they're going after. It's the same right-wing agenda that we've seen for the last couple of years. They didn't learn their lessons in the elections. No. In fact, the moneyed interests now are going to double down to make sure that they can get all they can here in the next couple of months and, well, next term as well. But in Michigan, while they rammed through their no rights at work agenda, they're also going after women's rights. Which is why I thought it was important to get Megan Groen to come on, director of the government relations there for Planned Parenthood Michigan, MIPlannedParenthood.org, their website, to come talk about the attacks on women in Michigan. Megan, thanks for taking time for me.
No, absolutely. Thanks for having me on. There's a lot of important stuff going on in Michigan that I think we're kind of seeing going on across the nation, and it's very important that we're all, you know, kind of working together and banding together and, you know, making sure that we're all on the same page and standing together when all these attacks are going on that are really affecting, you know, the middle class, working class families, women. It's you know, really incredible that we're standing, you know, where we are in 2012.
Yeah, the thing that I said back in 2011 when we were in Michigan, and the reason we had gone to Michigan, to Wisconsin, for the occupation was, look, you know, at the end of the day, I was saying back in February of 2011, look, Pennsylvania, it's coming. It's coming across the country. This is a national agenda. This is national money. These are the billionaires who now have in place all of the pieces, all of their think tanks, all of their American Legislative Exchange Council type groups. Now's the time for them to make their play. And we saw it in Wisconsin. We saw it in Ohio. We saw it in Maine. We've seen it in numerous states. And, well, you know what? Michigan's just next. And guess what? Pennsylvania's in the tank. We're all in the shark tank together. It's just, well, Michigan's flavor of the month right now.
Well, you know, it's interesting that I can see how you could have mixed us up with Wisconsin there for a second, because you know what I've got to tell you is Wisconsin, Indiana, and Ohio, they have all had right to work legislation so-called right to work, and attacks on women's health, defunding Planned Parenthood, trying to shut down Planned Parenthood health centers, all come up at the same time. And it seems to be something that's happening again and again. And if you really look at the people that they're impacting and the people that they're attacking, I mean, you're looking at a lot of the same families here. Yep. I mean, this is all an attack on middle-income America, on working families. You know, and it's just tragic because you really look at, you know, the election. We had an 18-point gender gap, and all of a sudden they're going on and, you know, you guys in Pennsylvania, I know you guys have had a lot of attacks of your own on women's health. We went through over the summer. We had a lot of legislation go through. We had thousands of folks flood the Capitol. They decided to take it off the agenda, not do it for a little while, until all of a sudden we're in lame duck after the election. And they're bringing it all back up. And it's really unconscionable that they would really go through, and after the election that we had, go through and put these types of attacks that are going to shut down Planned Parenthood health centers, that are going to shut down women's health care centers, and really put all these attacks together that is really going to be a huge impact on, you know, working class America. And it's very tough to see these attacks go through. And, I mean, they should really be ashamed of themselves.
I absolutely agree. But is there, and I had someone ask me earlier, is there any way of in the next session or the session after of going back and rolling this stuff back? Because someone asked me, you know, are they going to be able to go just pass another law over top? And I'll go, easier said than done. But I'm curious, is there a way of going and undoing this in the next term?
Procedurally? I mean, I guess that's a possibility. I mean, it's very hard. I mean, I think something we've learned historically is, you know, once you go down a certain road and you have certain things in place that have been attacks on working America, it's very hard to roll those back. And you've got a lot of people who have a lot of funding who are doing a lot of things that are making sure that doesn't happen. And, you know, what we really need to do is make sure that these laws don't get enacted from the beginning, because it's very, very hard to overturn them.
Yeah. You brought up, you know, the attacks that you brought up, you know, in Ohio, in Wisconsin, in Michigan, Indiana, you know, states across the country, they're here as well. The same legislation is right here in Pennsylvania. It's not, you know, not well public. Our media doesn't spend a lot of time focused on, well, any time focused on it. But they're there. And what's amazing to me is...
certainly had your fair share of attacks on women's health care in Pennsylvania.
But what's amazing to me is it's all the same. And it seems like the same hand is writing most of it. The same points are in all of the... it's all the same.
Yeah, I mean, I won't, you know, claim to be an expert on exactly, you know, how all of this is working. But it is something that, you know, when we saw it all come through, it was fairly shocking to see it come through that quickly. Without any type of public input. When you're looking at right to work legislation, I mean, these bills never even went to committee. These just got passed through quickly, no public input, nobody that would be impacted by them. And, you know, it's really parallel to what happened with women's health care over the summer in Michigan. You know, when we had this legislation first introduced, it was specifically designed, and I never thought that I would be on the exact same talking point as the Republican legislators that were telling the media that this legislation was designed to shut down Planned Parenthood. It was designed to shut down women's health care centers. We had the same interpretation of the bill.
Right.
And, you know, it's just amazing that when that went through, Planned Parenthood was not permitted to testify on the bill. The committee was shut down. Not one woman was permitted to testify on that legislation when it went through the entire House. Doctors weren't allowed to testify. I mean, it was amazing. How can you pass through legislation and understand the ramifications of what it could do to women's health care, to people who count on these services, without listening to the providers or the people who count on these services?
Yeah, but you think they care. Do you really think that these folks who like you pointed out, not one woman on the whole panel, much like the thing with Sandra Fluke and Congress.
Oh, it was exactly like that.
At some point, women in this country have got to wake up and go, you know, there's a political party in this country that thinks you're second-class citizens.
You know, and that's, it's, you know, it's offensive that, you know, there are folks that think that we can't make our own decisions, that, you know, we really need the government coming in and, you know, somehow coming through and making medical decisions that, you know, should be made between a woman and her doctor, and even her family. I mean, these are things that we're not just looking at. I mean, these are, we had in Michigan, we have now had, it was tapped into a, we were looking at, the governor's priority was to reconfigure Blue Cross Blue Shield.
Right.
And so at the last minute, they dropped in an amendment in the Senate to ban all abortion coverage, essentially no matter what, in insurance plans in Michigan. And this just went through, and it just rammed right through, is going to the governor. And now this is something that, honestly, over 80% of insurance companies in Michigan, this is part of their core plan.
So hold on.
Change.
Hold on a second. Wait a second. Even if you want to buy it, you can't?
Well, they have a provision for an optional rider, which I can go ahead and tell you, first of all, it doesn't exist. There's nobody that offers that. Second of all, even if it did, nobody's buying a rider for the possibility they're going to have either an unwanted pregnancy, or this legislation has no exemptions for if the woman's health is in danger, if she has a fetal anomaly, that, you know, they realize the fetus can't be carried to term. You know, people are, you know, saying, oh, this is going too far, you know, you're talking about emotional issues. No, this is not an emotional issue when a woman in Hurley will be tacked on with not only losing a wanted pregnancy, but having thousands and thousands of dollars of hospital bills tacked on because their insurance is not legally able to cover it.
Yeah, I mean,
our families in Michigan got a lot of folks. I mean, there's not a lot of families that can afford, you know, a $5,000 to $10,000, you know, out of pocket hospital procedure. I mean, it's incredible.
Now, do you see the any hypocrisy in the positions on both the labor bill and on what you're talking about? That, you know, on one hand they're saying, well, you know, you should be able to choose, but on the other hand, no. I mean, is there some measure of hypocrisy, do you think? And we're going to use the government to make sure that one over the other.
In terms of physicians, I mean, we're seeing physicians largely on board with, with the fact that the government should in no way be talking about medical practice, and that's, you know, decisions that should be made between, you know, women, families, doctors. That's something that, you know, we have legislation going through in Michigan right now that's going to be heard at 9 a.m. that is going to make it so that a very broad conscientious objector legislation is going on, so that pretty much any facility, so you're talking about a hospital, educational institution, insurer, can just go ahead and decide to object to doing a procedure because they have a conscientious objection. So we're talking about a university deciding that, you know, they didn't want to, you know, put out certain counseling services. They don't want to provide a procedure. And there's no notice that needs to be going out. I mean, these are things that, you know, when people purchase insurance, when they have things, they're thinking they have comprehensive coverage.
Yeah.
I mean, this is something that people are counting on. You're not planning for something terrible to happen. That's why people purchase insurance.
Yeah, I mean,
that's why they go to a hospital.
Wow. I mean, what happens if you get Scientologists who, I think it's the Scientologists who don't believe in, is it doctors? Or what religion is that where they don't believe in going to the doctor?
I'm not totally well versed on this, but okay. In said thing that, you know, we're hypothetically talking about?
Yeah.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, it's inconceivable that, you know, people could really, I mean, you're not thinking about when you're in a desperate situation where you need to go to a hospital immediately, you're not thinking about, oh, do they perform the procedure I need right now? I mean, come on. This is just common sense. I mean, you can't have that type of thing happening. And for universities to be able to be saying that, you know, they won't provide certain counseling services, a lot of folks have insurance through their universities as well, in terms of healthcare that they have. I mean, it's just, you know, some other states have done some things that are similar, but not to this degree. I mean, this is, honestly, this is the most extreme thing that we've seen going around the nation. And it's something that I got to tell you guys in Pennsylvania, I'm worried for you. You know, you could be next.
Well, I'm worried for the entire country because what happens?
Well, that's true.
What happens, you know, because they keep talking about this no rights at work agenda. Oh, we're going to be able to steal Indiana. We'll steal them from Illinois, and Michigan will steal from, you know, Wisconsin, or steal from Illinois and the rest of them. And by the time we steal from each other and everyone's got this no rights at work agenda, who are you going to steal from then? Will conditions be so bad that we have to steal from the Chinese? I mean, that's my concern with on the no rights at work part. The other part of this is, you know, what happens if they do succeed? And Rick Perry said he wants to make it to where it's impossible to get an abortion and it's illegal. What happens then? Do we go back to the stories that my mother told me when she was a young girl, where women would go to Kentucky and have a botched abortion and end up dead? I hope not, because I've got two daughters. I don't want to see that day.
You know, and we're hearing from you and fathers across the country that are worried about this. It's amazing. And you know, the thing that's so sad is that, you know, if our goal, by the way, and I can speak for Planned Parenthood and say we are by no means opposed to this. Let's go through. Let's enact some policies to make it so that we reduce the number of abortions
Absolutely.
In the country.
No,
you know what Planned Parenthood does more every day to reduce the number of abortions in terms of the family planning services and birth control we provide than any other institution in America. And yet they're looking to shut our doors?
What you should do is use that the old Army quote. The old Army commercial from when I was a kid. We do more before 6 a.m. than, you know, they do in a whole day. You do more to prevent abortions and unplanned pregnancies than the entire Republican Party does in an entire year.
It's amazing. We do. And yeah, I feel like we're not getting the love from them about that. I really do. I got to tell you.
I mean, because the reality is I'm not in favor of abortion. I want to make them rare, extremely rare, which is why we educate.
Sure.
Which is why we educate and teach people to prevent. That's the way to be going, not outlawing and criminalizing things.
Well, and you're just looking to go through and make things less safe for women and really, you know, reduce their options. And by options, I really mean access to quality services. We've been there before. We know that abortion is going to exist. And it's something that, you know, we need to make sure is, you know, the safe, rare, and legal, I mean, that's great. You know what we need to do? Look into family planning services. And if you look, you know, globally, you know, America isn't exactly the poster child for, in the state of Michigan, and I don't know about Pennsylvania, but I'd be happy to look it up for you, 53% of our pregnancies right now are unplanned pregnancies. And that's something we can change. That is something we can do something about, we should.
And I remember going back to when I was in school, and this is back in the 80s, where the older the girls got and the older boys got, the less frequency the unplanned pregnancy, because you had a little more education, a little more ways of preventing it. Because, you know, I remember 8th, 9th grade, the numbers were through the roof, and by the time I got to be a senior, there was no one. Because as you got education, as you got the ability to prevent it, you did it. Common sense.
No, we've just got this huge divide now that has become less about public policy.
And more about control.
A little bit, yeah.
It's all about
control.
You look at these authoritarian pieces of legislation that they're ramming through, and like thieves in the night, they're doing it. You know, these are the people who told us they were going to bring us openness and transparency, and they're good government. And, oh, by the way, jobs, jobs, jobs. Yet I've seen none of that.
Nope, not a one.
So how do we stop this here? What advice do you give us here at the home front?
Well, you know, I mean, it was a tough day in Michigan, and I won't be shy about that. We had, we were out there, and by the way, Planned Parenthood was standing with all the unions. We were standing together. We were on the platform. We were talking about the attacks on the middle class, and we had 17,000 folks join us out there at the Capitol today. And it's something that, you know, unfortunately the governor did sign, so-called right to work legislation this evening, that was rushed through both chambers and, you know, sent to the governor. But it's something that, you know what, this fight isn't over. And the more and more we, you know, get out there, and honestly, the best way to do things is going to be to elect people that, you know, share our values.
Yep.
But we're also looking at, you know what? I mean, in terms of women's health issues, I will tell you that this summer when, or this spring when legislation to shut down our health centers sprang up, and by the way, it was less than a week between committee or between introduction and committee, we were given no notice. We were told, oh, this was going to be done before July. It was going to be done, you know, it's not even going to go into the fall. And you know what? The fact that we're still having this fight in the middle of December goes to show you that, you know what, we've had at least 10 days where we've had hundreds of folks show up at the Capitol and really had their voices be heard, thousands of emails, phone calls. You know, it's amazing that we're still here in the middle of December having this fight when we were told it would be over months ago.
Yeah, it's going to take boots on the ground. It's going to take people who are active, engaged, educated, and in the streets. Megan Groen, I appreciate
Absolutely.
The time. I wish you nothing but the best of luck there in Michigan. Thanks so much.
Thank you. We're hoping that you guys are doing well in Pennsylvania as well.
We're going to keep up the fight. Megan, I appreciate the time. Let's take a quick break right back after this. 1-888-520-RICK. 1-888-520-7425. This is the Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
I see them too.
It's all about the children, even after they're born. Rick Smith.
Ganley Law is a proud sponsor of the Rick Smith Show. To better serve you, Ganley Law has 9 offices throughout Pennsylvania. Call our main office in Waynesboro. If we think we can help you, we'll schedule a time and place that is convenient for you for a confidential initial consultation at no charge. At Ganley Law, you pay no retainer and no attorney fees unless we are successful in bringing your claim. Our experienced attorneys, Charles Ganley and Deborah Packer, will fight for your rights. If you face a work-related injury, an occupational disease such as hearing loss, work-related hepatitis or HIV, sexual harassment, or employment discrimination, call Ganley Law. That's toll-free statewide at 1-888-FIGHT-17. That's 1-888-334-4817. Ganley Law, fighting for workers' rights, fighting for your rights.
Also at GanleyLaw.com.
In the scramble to fix the federal deficit, one of Washington's worst ideas is widely considered by political elites, including some Democrats, to be a good idea, even a painless fix. The idea is to raise the age of eligibility for both Social Security and Medicare, shoving it from 65 to 67 or beyond. After all, goes Washington's conventional wisdom, people live so much longer now, so it won't hurt to postpone eligibility and save a couple of years of taxpayer outlays to people. But, as economist and columnist Paul Krugman has pointed out, this bit of conventional wisdom is merely conventional, in the sense of trite. While life expectancy has gone up on average, it has not increased much for working stiffs, especially tens of millions of lower wage and poorer workers. Unlike being a member of Congress, the work that these people do tends to require heavy lifting, which can make you old fast. Requiring them to do it even deeper into old age and to wait longer for medical assistance is, as Krugman bluntly calls it, cruel. Bear in mind, too, that working-class families are precisely the people who count on Social Security and Medicare. They don't have the socialized medical benefits and golden pensions that those pampered conventional wisdom spouters in Congress get. Oh, one more thing. The purported savings from this fix are so minimal as to be illusory. In fact, shoving ill or crippled elderly workers out of the cost-effective Medicare system will jack up America's health care costs. This is Jim Hightower saying, so raising the retirement age is gratuitous as well as cruel, but mostly it's severely ignorant. What's at work here is a policy-making elite that includes no working-class people, so it can cluelessly believe that making the lives of these Americans worse is painless.
What do the corporate powers from Wall Street to Walmart have in common? They hate the Hightower Lowdown. You can see why at www.hightowerlowdown.org.
Not right wing, just right. The Rick Smith Show. What they do, they smile in your face. All the time they want to take your place. The battle.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Check out the website, therickSmithShow.com. Questions, comments, something on your mind, you can email me, rick@therickSmithShow.com. So I saw this thing over at, it was over on Yahoo, one of their news sites. They were talking about the cities where almost everyone has a job. The cities, the top 10 metropolitan areas in the U.S. where they had the lowest unemployment rates. And, you know, as I was reading through the list of the cities, you know, something really glaring popped out at me. If you go back and you listen to the Romney campaign, you listen to the Republicans, government doesn't create jobs. Government's evil. Government's bad. Government doesn't do anything. No jobs. No. So I looked at these top 10 cities. And what were the thing that glued the majority of the 10 together? Well, healthcare spending and education. Healthcare spending, education, and oh, by the way, government. And you go down the list from Bismarck, North Dakota, who had the lowest unemployment rate, 2.2%. And you look at education, healthcare. In fact, in Bismarck, they had 6 colleges. You go to Fargo, North Dakota. What do they got in Fargo? Oh, yeah. Education. And in fact, you know, you look at the stuff, they had some mining, they had logging and some construction, but a lot of it, education, had an unemployment rate of about 3%. Grand Forks, North Dakota, 3% on a 3.1% University of North Dakota, one of the biggest employers in the area. Lincoln, Nebraska was number 4 at 3.2% unemployment rate. Anybody know where Lincoln, Nebraska? University of Nebraska, very good, A for you. You go down the list, you look at Ames, Iowa, number 6 on the list, 3.4% unemployment. That's where Iowa State University is from. Iowa City, Iowa, that's right, University of Iowa, very good, congratulations, gold star for you. Burlington, Vermont, home of the University of Vermont, has what, 10,000 employees. Logged in Utah, somewhere there in Idaho, University, Utah State University, employs more than 2,600 people. You go down this list and you realize education, healthcare, government, this is the center of job creation for these communities. By cutting, gutting, and austerity, what do you end up with? Well, those areas are going to have much higher unemployment rates. And the thing that caught me about the story, and they showed Sioux Falls, South Dakota, and everybody knows Sioux Falls, South Dakota. Anybody who has a credit card knows that, you know, Wells Fargo, Citigroup, the big banks, they've got their headquarters there because, of course, South Dakota, much like Delaware, a tax haven, which is why you've got these big banks there. But the thing that popped out at me, as I'm reading through this story about these communities that have really low unemployment rates, is that their median household income is generally somewhere around the national level or lower. And that the majority of people are right there in the middle. There are very few at the very top end. That, you know, like Krugman talks about, the Great Compression, where most people led, you know, fairly stable lives. You know, people went to work, they made a reasonable living. You didn't have the excess. You know, there's something, you know, as I was reading through this, there's something in that makes me go, you know, maybe they've got something right in these communities. You know, especially when you're talking about heavily investing in education and in healthcare. The public sector that pays a reasonable wage, not through the roof, not above the national, not above the median, no, a family sustaining wage. So when I started thinking about the whole election, and I started going, you know, instead of taking people's rights away, instead of walking away from investment, instead of slashing budgets and causing grief and austerity, we should be increasing our investment in education, increasing our investment in health care so that we have healthier people, better educated people. But we don't seem to be doing that. And I look at all these communities where you've got the anchor that you can't outsource. You're not going to outsource the University of Delaware. You're not going to outsource the University of Nebraska. You're not going to outsource Iowa or Iowa State universities. Outsource those. The University of Vermont, you're not going to outsource them. Utah State, you're not going to outsource those. Those are the anchors of those communities. Which is why, again, you go back to why they have lower unemployment rates, because those are stable. And what we need to be talking about over the coming weeks, months, and years is how do we create those stable kind of communities all across this country? Instead of pitting us against each other and dividing us, how do we grow together? But I guess that's a bit much to ask for, isn't it? You know, when you look at investment in people, you look at investment in infrastructure. I'm just not seeing it on the national or the state level. You know, they keep talking about Corbett's transportation plan. Well, maybe they'll do something this time around. I'm telling you what's coming. It's the division. It's the divisiveness. It's going to be privatizing the lottery and the wine and spirit shops. It's going to be going after pensions and destroying people's pensions and taking money out of the economy. And then it's going to be all of the ugliness that we see. Don't be surprised if it's here. Don't be surprised if we're holding rallies here in Harrisburg. Don't be surprised if there are backroom deals and backroom signing. It just blows my mind. I look at what happened today. There was no question they were going to pass it through. There was no question that the Michigan legislature was going to pass it. There was no question that their governor was going to sign this No Rights at Work bill. There's no question of it. It's how they did it. It's how that governor did it. Behind closed doors. Shrouded in secrecy. Don't you have a problem with that? I mean, even if you're not someone who supports a worker's right to choose, even if you're not one of those people, aren't you upset about the process that they've perverted? I know if I was someone who lived in Michigan, I sure would be. But it's those policies, that stuff that we need to be advancing. Things that bring us together, not tear us apart. And, you know, the governor of Michigan, he knew that. He said it's divisive.
Right to work is an issue that's a very divisive issue. People feel very strongly about.
It's a divisive issue. And he said, you know, it's not part of what we're going to do this year. It's not. And when he was asked if it created jobs.
Do you think there's evidence out there to show that it creates jobs, that it helps states compete?
The auto industry is a very competitive industry now in terms of their labor agreements and such. So on the face of it, I don't automatically have an answer, but I believe it's something that we should all take the time to understand before simply people kind of revert to their traditional positions on it.
Which is what they did and rammed it down our throat. And I love the way the Republican legislator there phrased the question. He was going to go, because he knows it doesn't create jobs. He knows that's a facade. He knows that's the canard. He started to say, does it create jobs? No. Does it make it competitive? Because, well, they know that it doesn't create any jobs. It makes the jobs that you have worse. And you look at, you know, Zach Wamp, you know, the clip we played a little bit ago in the bumper in. Less wages. Less health care. That's what this is about. Another ripoff of the working class. Quick break, right back after this. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
Ganley Law is a proud sponsor of The Rick Smith Show. To better serve you, Ganley Law has 9 offices throughout Pennsylvania. Call our main office in Waynesboro. If we think we can help you, we'll schedule a time and place that is convenient for you for a confidential initial consultation at no charge. At Ganley Law, you pay no retainer and no attorney fees unless we are successful in bringing your claim. Our experienced attorneys, Charles Ganley, and Deborah Packer will fight for your rights. If you face a work-related injury, an occupational disease such as hearing loss, work-related hepatitis, or HIV, sexual harassment, or employment discrimination, call Ganley Law. That's toll-free statewide at 1-888-FIGHT-17. That's 1-888-334-4817. Ganley Law, fighting for workers' rights, fighting for your rights.
Also at GanleyLaw.com.
Hey there, fellow working class heroes. I have some great news. You can now get the Rick Smith Show podcast on your iPhone, Android, BlackBerry, or Palm on demand and on the go. Get your class war to go by downloading the Stitcher app on your smartphone by going to Stitcher.com and search for The Rick Smith Show, or go to our website at TheRickSmithShow.com and click on our Stitcher button. Together we can and we will rebuild a prosperous working class and leave opportunity for our children.
The most important issues of the day. This is The Rick Smith Show.
Welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Check out the website, TheRickSmithShow.com. Questions, comments, something on your mind, you can email me, Rick, at TheRickSmithShow.com. Interesting interview I saw on TV today. Jim Cramer, CNBC host, was talking with U.S. Representative Scott Garrett, Republican from New Jersey. They're talking about spending on what's going on, the Sandy disaster, and you know, how we're going to clean this up. And you know, one of those things that you kind of... It's all in the way they're thinking. Cramer said, "Hey, you know, if we don't spend this money, if we don't fund this, you know, even if there is a little bit of waste, it's going to really hurt people." And the good Republican that Garrett is says, "Well, one person's stimulus is another person's wasteful spending." So, you know, helping those people, helping folks, that's somebody's wasteful spending. Could it be his? Could it be the Republican Party? Quite frankly, I believe yes. Anyway, let's go to Washington, D.C., find out what's going on there in the big town. I've got Ellen Ratner, Talk Radio News Service. Ellen, thanks for taking time for me.
Thank you so much.
So one person's stimulus is another person's wasteful spending, according to Representative Garrett.
I guess so. I mean, the rhetoric, particularly that Boehner was saying today, Speaker Boehner on the floor of the House saying, you know, that the president hadn't listed where his spending cuts were going to be. Yeah, he had.
Yeah, I think there was a, back there, if you paid attention to the campaign, I think he came out with a whole 20-page plan, if I remember right.
And then he released a recent plan. It's just crazy.
But how much of it is just, you know, playing for the cameras, playing for the sound bites, you know, keeping the low information voter enraged at the sound bites that they get? I mean, because, you know, I was driving in today and I heard, you know, sound bites on the radio, and they're all anti-Obama. They're all, well, Boehner's trying, he's fighting, Obama's in the way. Every one of them.
Yeah, I'll tell you, there is a lot of sound bites for that, and they're trying to make, you know, sort of deal with the what's the matter with Kansas crowd, the crowd that votes against their own interest very often.
Yeah, I mean, look at Michigan.
Well, that'll just give me a heart attack.
I mean, you know, to me, there's no other issue today than what happened in Michigan. And I keep telling folks, look, here in Pennsylvania, we're not isolated. We're not on an island by ourselves. We're all in this shark tank. And it's Michigan was flavor of the month right now. We're still in the shark tank. There's the same ugly legislation here, the same attacks on workers, the same attacks on women. You name it, it's here, the same ALEC legislation that's gone all across the country, just with different names sponsoring it here.
Yes, and that is exactly the problem, that the groups like ALEC have, one, worked to get Republican strongholds in the states and then push their legislation because they believe if they push it in the states that it will work in the federal government as well.
And you look at it's a handful of people, which just blows my mind. That thing in Michigan, a handful of people. You got the Koch brothers and you got the DeVos guy. Who bankrolled pretty much the whole thing. And why'd they do it? Because they can. And why do they want it? Because they want more power.
They want a lot more power, but they also want, I mean, this would be, quote-unquote, good for their business, because they can get away without paying certain wages. They can get away without paying certain benefits, such as health care and other conditions.
And that's really all it's about. And, you know, the thing is, I look at the Koch brothers and I look at, you know, the woman in Wisconsin, the billionaire woman. I forget what her name is off the top. Diane Hendrickson. You know, who's a billionaire a couple of times over. She can buy anything she wants. She can have anything she wants. Yet what gets her all tingly in the panties when she's talking to Scott Walker? Oh, when can we have right to work? What is it? It's that absolute power. It's that control that, well, they don't have the absolute power and control right now that they want.
I'm not sure I 100% agree with that. I think that it's more motivated by money. Now, you may equate that with power. But, you know, I think that she gets insecure about her money and therefore feels like if people don't have the right to work and she might have to pay union wages, ooh, what's that going to mean?
Yeah, but I mean, you look at the Koch brothers, for instance. I mean, a lot of the places that, and I guess they're going to go after them. Once they get these right to work laws all across the country, once they finish off their no rights at work agenda, then you're right. They will go after those wages and they will go after those benefits. But at the end of the day, it's really about having that control. You do what I say or there will be consequences.
Yes, and that's exactly right. Well, I have a feeling that the governor of Michigan's going to be in for a big surprise, because I don't think, unless he has some plant up his sleeve that's going to somehow produce, you know, 3,000 jobs that they've promised to get in, that he's going to get what he wants.
Yeah. Well, the thing that gets me, though, is the way they did it. Look, you know, when Indiana went through it, didn't like it, but, you know, they went along their process. This 8 hours on a Thursday, you ram it through without any public input, any hearings, nothing. To me, that's another
kind
sign.
Kind of like the Egyptian constitution that Morsi's trying to get going.
Exactly. I mean, you know, the reality is when you have that kind of steamroller power, which I don't want any party to have, you know, you look what they did. I mean, it is what it is.
It's shocking. It's shocking. And he signed it tonight.
Yeah, and he's, not only did he sign it, but he signed it in the cloak of darkness, signed it in a secret ceremony, a secret signing off in a closet somewhere probably. Couldn't even do that in public.
It's really quite astounding. It is quite astounding. And I think from what I've seen from the unions, everything from Trumka and the AFL-CIO to the teachers union, Randy Weingarten, all those people are quite shocked.
So then the question I have for them is, where do you go from here? I mean, you know, at this point, you've got to now mobilize and you've got to hold people accountable. And I think, like Hoffa said, there are going to be repercussions. Get to it.
Well, I think there will be repercussions. It's quite amazing that this governor, who really was quite friendly to the unions, and the unions were friendly to him.
Well, I mean, if you listen to what he said today, it was very Machiavellian. He told them, don't go after proposition. I'm telling you, don't do it. They did, and now this is to me, a very taking somebody out in public square and gutting them in public. This is exactly what it is.
It'll be very interesting to see the long-term effect of it.
Yeah, but the sad reality is, it's people like me, it's people like my listeners, it's working class folks. They're going to be the ones who struggle. They're going to be the ones who suffer because, you know, the statistics don't lie. The facts don't lie. Lower income, lower rates of folks having health care, lower rates of folks having pensions, higher injury rates, higher death rates on the job. The statistics do not lie.
Right. I mean, the death rate was really quite astounding when I read it.
I mean, but, you know, again, this is what happens when you vote against your own interest. I mean, they put these people in there, and there's part of me that goes, how did you not know this was on the agenda? Because here in Pennsylvania, look, it's on the agenda. It just doesn't have the political will yet to go through. They get it. It's going through.
You think it's going to happen there?
Well, there are four bills sitting in our legislature. I'm not saying that the political will isn't here. There are too many moderate Republicans. There are too many labor-friendly Republicans in this state for them to ram this through like they did in Michigan. But if the big money comes in and says we're gonna do like some of the things I've heard that went on in Michigan, anything's possible, Ellen.
Well, that would be scary.
I mean, look, I mean, the DeVos family's here in Pennsylvania. Look what they're doing in Philadelphia to education, to the whole privatization. Betsy DeVos is one of the key people in this country working to destroy public education in this country with her little front group.
You wonder what makes these people tick, Rick. You wonder what makes them get up in the morning. Now, you think it's power. I'm not sure it's that. I think it's money, not that they're that different sometimes.
I think it's control. I think it's a lot of it. I think, well, yeah, we want all of it. We want more. We want it now. But it's also that control. I know best. I'm wealthy. I got here. I'm special. I know best. It's that, you know, it's basically.
They see their wealth as the sign of their brilliance rather than luck.
Yeah. And instead of, you know, and to me, this whole fiscal mirage, all this stuff that's going on, we should be not encouraging more handfuls of people. We shouldn't be encouraging giving more to the Kochs and the DeVosses and all of the wealth class in this country. We should be figuring out how we spread that a little bit more down to the working people of this country. And, you know, I look at, you know, this whole fiscal mirage thing. They're fighting over, really, really honest and truthfully, they're fighting over feeding the handful at the top much more by taking food out of the mouths of poor children. I mean, I don't know how much more easily you can put it. They're talking about cutting food stamps and keeping tax cuts for the wealthiest people in this country. What other thought can you
come
up
with? Well, you know, it's interesting. When you even have a Republican representative, former representative, who now works for Google, such as Susan Molinari, saying that they better not cut education. And here's a Republican. That's really quite astounding.
Yeah, well, I mean, don't make Google out to be all that great. Google, what was it, $2 billion in the last couple of years? They've offshored in taxes that they haven't paid. The report just came out the other day that they're doing what corporations we've allowed them to do. We've allowed them to set up these tax havens, and they're sheltering money that, you know what, come out of the mouths of children, come out of the education that kids in this state are not going to get, because we've got a governor that cut $2 billion, $1 billion each of the last 2 years from K-12 education and pursuing privatization. I mean, you know, this is the stuff that drives me insane.
Yes, and it drives me insane, too. I mean, I'm not happy about Google not paying their offshore taxes, but the point is even when you have a corporation like that and their representative warning about cutting education, that says something.
Yeah, because they need the knowledge. They need that knowledge. They need those trained workers. They need people to be smart people who get it. I'm with them. We should be investing heavily in education, but we're not.
No, we're not. And we're expecting, you know, to test into oblivion without providing the finances to help students who may be behind and that kind of thing.
You know, I just talked about a report earlier that, you know, they're talking about education and how around the world we're not doing so well, where the Russians are doing much better than we are in science. And whereas before we were doing better than they are, it's because, in my view, we've gone to this split system. We want to privatize. We want these charters and all of these other things away from education. All of this money going to the Vaughan Gregorians of the world in their for-profit charter schools, not going into the classroom.
That is what is shocking. And I am the product of public education. And I have to tell you, I learned everything I know from public education.
Yeah, well, I mean, at the rate that we're defunding it, don't be surprised at some point if there's nothing left, or that what's left is a crumbled mess. Because, you know, you look here in this state, the charter schools, they have to be paid first. So if a school district has a charter school in their
really?
District, they pay that charter school before a dime goes to the public school. And
you're
you look
kidding.
At, no, you look at, and I'm sure you've heard of the Chester Upland School District. For 2 months last year, they didn't pay a teacher because they didn't have a dime. But they paid that for-profit charter school run by the people that are owned by Vaughan Gregorian. They paid him almost $16 million in management fees. That's $16 million that didn't get into that public school. Went to the management fees. Didn't even go to education. And that
wow.
had to be paid first. And that's how our law is set up. Because we've got folks, you know, big money people like the DeVosses who spend money on politicians both on both sides of the aisle, Democrats and Republicans.
Shocking.
It's an absolute ripoff.
I didn't realize that was the law there.
Now, well, it's insane is what it is. It's what big money will buy you. And you look at what happened with big money bought in Michigan. You look at what big money has bought across this country. At some point, we've got to get the money out of politics. Last story tonight. You said breaking news, North Korea shot off a long-range missile. What happened?
They did. Well, they shot off a long-range missile, which they claim is for some scientific purposes. But it went over Okinawa. Give me a break.
What's over there, other than people?
Right. Exactly. Not exactly a scientific mission. And the Security Council has forbidden them to do that.
And, you know, I had hope for North Korea. You know, I mean, just recently they found the unicorn. I thought they were going to come into the mainstream. Guess not. Did you see that story? They found a unicorn?
I did not.
Yeah, the unicorn that their grand poobah or whatever he was hundreds of years ago rode in on and created the country. The whole big story, they found it. In fact, there was a big sign. Unicorn.
Oh, my gosh, that's hilarious.
Yeah, well, these are the same people who said that Kim Jong-il had a round of golf with 11 holes in one. So there you go. Maybe it was putt-putt. Who knows?
Putt-putt, definitely.
Ellen, always great talking with you.
Thank you.
Our good friend Ellen Ratner, Talk Radio News Service. Quick break, right back after this. Stick around.
Of red, Rick Smith.
AFSCME Council 13 members, did you know that you have voluntary benefits available to you that you can pay for through the ease of payroll deduction? AFSCME Council 13 offers a voluntary benefits package to help provide money when you or a covered family member incurs one of these life events, accidents, critical illness, disability, or death. No one can avoid life's unfortunate situations. However, AFSCME Council 13 has provided you with the opportunity to ease the financial burden on your family by preparing now. Find out more about Trustmark's voluntary benefits. BBS Benefit Solutions can help you get the security you need. Call BBS at 1-866-902-2561. Again, call BBS at 1-866-902-2561.
Earth, sky.
Homicide moves through a community like an infectious disease. That's according to a study published in the journal Justice Quarterly in late 2012.
The researchers say their findings could help police track and even prevent murders. Using Newark, New Jersey as a pilot case, researchers from Michigan State University's School of Criminal Justice applied public health tracking methods to the city's more than 2,000 homicides between the years 1982 and 2008.
They found the killings weren't randomly located. Instead, they followed a pattern evolving from the city's center and moving southward and westward over time. Influenza spreads to susceptible groups in a certain pattern. For example, children and the elderly are affected soonest.
Much like a flu, homicide clusters in Newark, often fueled by gangs and guns, spread first to certain areas. The cases studied here tended to affect mostly poor people and ethnic minorities first.
These researchers suggest that using analytic software from the field of medical geography eventually might help police identify emerging crime hotspots.
The researchers also identified areas of Newark that had no homicide clusters during the study's time frame. They want to learn why those communities are more resistant. Today's program was made possible in part by our friends at Futurity.org. Earth Sky is a clear voice for science.
We're at EarthSky.org.
Uncovering the con in conservatism. Rick Smith.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Check out the website, TheRickSmithShow.com. Questions, comments, something on your mind, you can always email me, Rick@TheRickSmithShow.com. And you can email me if I've gotten something wrong, something you go, hey, I messed up a little bit. Scientology, when I said it, I knew it wasn't Scientology. They're the technocrat kind of things, as the email points out, a Christian scientist. And got half of it right, right? But just want to make sure I correct that. They seem to be the ones that they're against modern medicine. And the whole praying thing that, you know, that's going to cure it. And look, I'm not against it, but you know, sometimes antibiotics help. Just a thought. Anyway, is exactly what it is. Also got another email from Bill, who sent me an article from a Fox News contributor. Her name is Suzanne Venker. She's written the book War on Men. And, you know, she has an interesting point of view, if you like. I don't tend to agree. She writes in her piece, women shouldn't let their success in the workplace become the biggest things in their lives. If the ultimate goal is lasting love, then let's face it, for most people it is, women are going to have to become comfortable with sacrifice and capitulation. She writes, surrendering to your femininity means many things. It means letting your man be the man, despite the fact that you're proven to be his equal. She says it's okay if your guy's in charge. It's okay if you don't drive the car. In fact, it's rather liberating. And, you know, I read that and I go, does she really believe that? Or is it what the conservative paymasters want from her? Because I can't imagine anyone going, you know what? I'm equal, if not superior to you. But you know what? Because I believe in this bizarre ideology. I'm going to take a back seat. I'll be honest. It's not the world that I want my daughters growing up in. I want them to be with someone that they love and respect and treat them well. Not because that they have to. Not because that they have to sacrifice or capitulate. But because they're equals. To me, that seems to be the right way to go. But, you know, again, what you've got this ideology in the wealth class pushing this stuff. And I guess, you know, hey, you know, another what's another paid shill, if you will. Anyway, if you missed any portion of the program, you can download the podcast there at the website, therickSmithShow.com. As always, you can contact me, Rick, at therickSmithShow.com. I do enjoy the emails, especially the crazy ones. Getting a couple of those here today when you're looking at what happened in Michigan. We're going to talk about that again tomorrow, the fiscal mirage. Again, it looks like there's some negotiations going on back and forth. We'll talk about that. Also, your input. As always, again, you can email me, Rick, at therickSmithShow.com. Have a good one. We'll see you back here. Oh, we'll see you back here tomorrow.
Been listening to The Rick Smith Show. Together, we can make America better. Email Rick at therickSmithShow.com or interact with us anytime at therickSmithShow.com. Until next time, this has been The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
It's coming like the tide flood beneath the lunar sway. Imperial, mysterious, and amorous ray. Democracy is coming.
Here comes Rick Smith on the horn.